Hey, Pardon My Take listeners. You can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
For us, golf is simple. It's a chance to get out and have some fun with our friends. But inevitably, little things have a way of ruining it. The group ahead is taking forever, you can't find the fairway with a map, and the bev cart is nowhere to be found. And the best way to make a bad day better is Fireball Whiskey. You get their nips, the little shooters. They are great. Makes bad day way, way, way better. Make sure to grab the new Fireball Birdie Shot Club. It's literally a golf club filled with Fireball nips. Put it in your bag. It'll fit right in that side pocket. Drink Fireball nips and have a great time on the golf course.
Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. When did cheap plastic disposables with 90s-style graffiti art become the norm? No offense if Gaudi Pastel is your style, but the Flonk Max Smart embodies a smarter way to vape. The Flonk is sleek and discreet, and the most popular flavors are available nicotine-free and in 2% and 5% strength. A flexible disposable with a smart LED screen, the Flonk churns out 10,000 dense and delicious puffs. Visit MyPod.com and use promo code STOOL for 25% off Flonk vapes.
On today's Part in My Take, the NFL draft is complete. We recap all of it, grade the grades. I'm excited because I found a grading of the grades.
Oh, really? Who did it?
Raiders
F.
It's what everyone would, if you took all the mock drafts, you know what, fuck it, we'll just talk about it in a second. It's very confusing, but not confusing at all. It also means absolutely nothing.
Correct.
But that's the best part about grading the drafts. We have that. We are going to talk some Kentucky Derby. Shout out our guy, Randy Moss. We have an awesome, awesome interview with Eddie George. And then we have a great Monday reading pack show for everyone. Very excited for this one. And
that's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
It's Pardon My Take, presented by Barstool Sports. Welcome to Pardon My Take, presented by Chevy Silverado, the most advanced Silverado ever, the greatest truck ever created. Today is Monday, May 3rd, and congratulations, everyone. We are still alive. Fuck you, Kyle Shanahan.
Most of us. Jimmy Garoppolo still hasn't responded to my inquiry. By the way, Jimmy hasn't tweeted since 2019.
But guess what, PFT? Jimmy G got he did an old vet move. So when they drafted Trey Lance, yep. The first story out from the Niners camp, from I think John Lynch reported it, Jimmy G was the first one to text Trey Lance.
I imagine he just said, get out.
Yeah. I imagine that John Lynch probably just had a burner phone and was like, what up, Trey? It's Jimmy G. Love to take you under my wing, dude.
So I'm a little bit concerned about Trey Lance because for all the talk of Kyle Shanahan and whether or not he was going to murder Jimmy Garoppolo, you do have to ask, like we talk about coach killing quarterbacks, right?
Mm-hmm.
He might be a quarterback killer. If you go back and you look at the quarterbacks that have played under Kyle Shanahan, they put up good stats occasionally, but then after he leaves, it all goes to shit. So he's had Johnny Manziel,
mm-hmm.
RG3, that's Rex Grossman III,
mm-hmm.
also the other RG3,
mm-hmm.
John Beck, Matt Schaub, Matt Ryan, who never won another MVP after Kyle Shanahan, and then Jimmy Garoppolo. And then he's had like some backup guys that he's able to do. He's the best backup quarterback coach of all time.
Yes. But if you just have his system, you'll be good.
You'll be good.
You'll be good.
For as long as he's there until he decides that it's time to take you behind the shed.
Yeah. Also, shout out Chris Sims, who I listened to his show on Friday with our internet uncle slash, what is he to me?
Internet
no, he's
godfather?
Uncle to me, dad to you.
He's my internet father.
Chris Sims,
It was very clear that Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers did do a good job of telling absolutely no one, because I think Chris Sims was like, this is really fucked up. I have this guy's initials on my ankle, and he didn't tell me that they were taking Trey Lance. Also, the 49ers, how would you feel about this? You're Trey Lance. You get drafted number 3 overall. You get a text from Jimmy G right away. You're feeling good. Then, in the 3rd round, the 49ers draft a different Trey. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That would kind of piss me off.
Yeah, Trey power rankings. Yeah, you got to be the only Trey. Drafted by your team. It would just suck if you had to figure out a whole new set of nicknames for yourself when you got into the NFL. But I'm sure they give you those when they haze you.
Yes.
But, yeah, Chris Sims actually proved that Kyle Shanahan was right to not tell him.
Yes.
Because Kyle Shanahan was like, yeah, we're best friends. We played football together at Texas. We have each other's initials tattooed on our calves. And I bet you if I tell him who I'm thinking about drafting, he'll probably go on his national media platform and say it, which, to be fair to Chris Sims, that's kind of his job.
His job.
And then, sure enough, that's exactly what happened. So it actually proved that Kyle Shanahan was right to lie to his best friend, and everything worked out perfectly. But if you're Chris Sims, I guess, you know what? He's never going to trust anybody ever again.
No.
Chris Sims'
you could tell in
little
his voice.
Heart is broken into a million pieces.
You could tell in his voice that it was broken. All right, so draft grades. So I saw on Twitter someone named Renee, I'm going to butcher this last name, Bugner? It's Bugner, Renee Bugner, compiled these. So combined 18 evaluations. So how it worked was essentially just what the 18 grades were, and then combined all of them and gave each team a GPA. So and it has, I'm just reporting it, the Bears at number 1, 3.99, which seems a little ridiculous.
Wait, what was it? 3.199?
3.99.
So they do actual GPA grades.
This is so
which as we discussed,
well, he took everyone's grade. And then he put it 18 grades and then added all of them.
Okay.
So, and then the Texans got a 1.88 grade.
The Texans,
that was the worst draft.
The Texans and the Seahawks should just have gone pass-fail.
Yeah.
Well, the Texans, just incomplete.
The Texans, I think they kind of admitted that Deshaun Watson's not going to be their quarterback when they drafted Davis Mills.
Maybe.
We still don't know.
It was like,
but they didn't have a first round pick because they never have first round picks,
right?
And then they took Davis Mills with their first pick, being like, we need a quarterback now.
It was such a sad pick though, because like nobody. I think Davis Mills is a quarterback. He was the number one rated high school prospect when he went to college.
Yes, big time.
You had to ask anytime you get somebody at Stanford. You have to ask the question if they're too smart. You don't want. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want free thinkers in the NFL. That was the big.
Or if they're Kevin Hogan.
Yes.
You have to ask that question.
Are
as well.
You Kevin Hogan? How do you spell your first name?
Because they all are the same guy.
Right, they are. But in the Texans' circumstance, it's like they kind of admitted that they need a new quarterback, but they didn't try to make any moves.
Right.
But I guess they couldn't make any moves, so it was just like the saddest draft pick of all time.
Right, exactly. And so that was the range. A lot of consensus is saying the Browns, the Chargers, the Jets, the Dolphins, the Patriots all had very good drafts. The Lions, who Dan Campbell, just took, I think his first three picks were offensive line, defensive line, defensive line.
Yep.
Then cornerback, and then he did take a wide receiver in the fourth, but then followed up with an inside linebacker.
Yeah, so.
So he knows, like, he is really going to get the kneecap eaters.
Dan Talica, the behind-the-scenes phone calls that he was making to the players when he was drafting, they were the best, because if you think John Gruden says the word man frequently, it is probably at least 3 or 4 times more frequent in Dan Campbell's vernacular.
Yes.
He just talks to players like, man, you know what he says? He goes, man, we're pumped.
We're
I gotta tell
pumped.
You, I am so pumped, man.
Are you pumped?
I'm pumped, man.
Yeah,
and then his
I'm pumped. Are
his
you pumped
GM
to be
goes
here?
Over and just smashes his desk.
Those type of guys always have to check everyone else's pump
What's the
meter.
Pump level?
Like, hey, are you pumped to be here?
Jake, are you pumped right now?
You better be pumped.
So excited.
You don't look. No, I didn't ask if you were excited. I asked if you were pumped.
Yeah, I'm pumped.
Yeah.
Pump.
Oh, shit. Whoa. All right, we're going to have to change that so people don't hate Jake there for that one. But it's good that you're pumped.
Yeah, he is pumped. Man Campbell, he's pumped, man. I'm pumped that we're getting you with our pick, man. You're going to pump this franchise up so much. You're rebuilding. And my favorite part actually about that entire phone call was when he put the owner of the team on the phone to talk.
Yes.
And it's like, what do you say to the owner of the team after they draft?
I'm fucking pumped.
Thank you. I'm pumped. My other favorite phone call was when the Cardinals drafted the guy from Tulsa, who I think might be my favorite guy in the draft, Zaven Collins. Because the first thing Zaven Collins said to Steve Keim was, I'm going to fucking kill everybody.
Yes.
We're going to fucking kill people. We're going to get a ring that a show dog couldn't jump over. I don't know what that means, but I believe him now. And that dude is a mod. He's 6'5", 260. And besides him, I've noticed that the Cardinals are kind of dedicated to rebuilding their franchise using short kings.
Yes.
So Andy Isabella.
Well, you... I think Kyler Murray. It makes sense. You draft a quarterback that is short. It's kind of like how Tom Cruise yes. will never be in a film with anyone taller than yes. him. You can't have people taller than Kyler Murray. You need to make him feel like the biggest man in the room.
And then Rondale Moore, that's the guy from Purdue, right?
Yep, he's
short
awesome.
King that squats like 700 pounds or whatever.
He is awesome.
It's partially that you don't want Kyler to be shorter than all of his receiving options.
Mm-hmm.
One or two if Larry's out there. Like, Larry Fitzgerald's butt is taller than Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
But I think it's also Cliff Kingsbury just wanting to look tall for all the pictures that he posts on Instagram.
Yes.
He's like, look how big I am. Don't I look huge?
Big, strong man. Yeah. The other quote we had was from this guy, basically. Dan Campbell probably gave him an extension the minute he said this, but new Lions defensive tackle, Levi, I'm going to butcher his last name. Can you help me, Jake? Onwuzurike. Said, I like fucking people up. I like pushing them back 2 to 3 yards and making them feel like shit. That's a man Campbell yeah. guy. That right there is a man. That alone is the draft.
I'm seriously rooting with every fiber of my body for the Detroit Lions to be a good football team under Dan Campbell. I want him to succeed because the dude's he's a content machine.
Yeah, yeah. Did I even come close?
Onwuzurike.
There we go. Onwuzurike. The Bears took an offensive line, so I'm ready to talk about the love that Ryan Pace is getting. That is over. That's too much. Ryan Pace did what he had to do to keep his job at this point. So it's like, oh my God, look, he traded up for an offensive lineman in the second round that everyone thought was going to be a first rounder. Mm-hmm. No shit. He's got to win now.
Yeah.
Because if he doesn't win now, he's fired and he doesn't give a fuck about next year's draft.
I had a moment of clarity over the weekend regarding my raining on your parade on the draft on Thursday. There's that commercial. It's the Geico Ants commercial. We have ants in our house. It's probably not Geico, but you know the one with
I know
all the
exactly
ants
what you're
play.
Talking about. Yes.
And the one lady's like, wow, this is certainly got a big house here. Hope you can keep it clean. That's pretty much what I did to you, where I was like, you got a great quarterback.
Too.
Be a shame if his ribs broke again.
It's tax guy. When someone signs like a $100 million contract, you're like, but after agent fees and taxes, that's only like 40.
Exactly.
It's like, no, I'm still very, very pumped about Justin Fields. It's I think it tells you more about like Bear fandom and the Bears franchise that I could absolutely say, without a doubt, the happiest I've been in a very long time was because of a draft pick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that draft pick had me on cloud nine. I woke up with a smile on my face on Friday. I'm just, like, I almost don't even want to take my precious little Justin Fields doll out of the box.
Because the idea of what he could be is probably better than what...
And like, he's got swag, dude. Like, that's not... Think about it this way. The Bears' swaggiest quarterback since Jim McMahon, who did have undeniable swag... was a guy whose main characteristic was just being a dickhead.
Todd Collins.
Jay Cutler. Yeah. Like, he's, you know, like, and I love Jay, but the reason why everyone loves Jay is because he says whatever he wants. Justin Fields has swag.
Mm-hmm.
He has swag.
You guys, I feel like it's kind of revisionist history, though. When you guys got Khalil Mack, there was a buzz
was
and there was
exciting.
A feeling but, like, all right, we're destined for a championship.
Yeah, but remember what happened week one?
Yeah. Right.
That was the best half that I've been happy for, and then Aaron Rodgers shit down my throat.
Khalil Mack was the missing piece that was going to put you over
the
top.
It's also how different it is. That's really what it comes down to, is like Justin Fields is totally different than anything the Bears have ever had. And yeah, partially that is like the fact that the Bears just historically have never had black quarterbacks, but like it's just the running ability, the passing ability, like a big time, a guy who, as of, you know, when we were watching the semifinals, it was a legit debate, like, he might become the number one drafted quarterback. Then Zach Wilson, you know, did a couple fucking baseball throws against Troy, and everyone was like, man, he's the best.
Well, no, it was the pro day. It was Zach Wilson's pro day that turned over.
I'm excited. It's going to probably fail, but that's why you got to enjoy. You know what it reminds me of, Hank? It reminds me of when Wisconsin beat Kentucky in Indianapolis. I said to you, I'm going to party my face off because I'll never be back here. You got to enjoy the moments when you have happiness, knowing that you'll probably never have that happiness again. And then they lost to Duke.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
It's like a Lamborghini that you have in your garage that you're like afraid to take out.
Yeah, I just want to look at it.
Yeah.
I just want to fucking look at it.
Take pictures of it. Have your friends come over, talk about how cool it is.
We have a new nickname alert, by the way. This is such a sign of Dave Gettleman being like such a stick in the mud, but I kind of love him. Dave Gettleman, his entire career as a GM, so obviously Panthers and Giants, never traded in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
He traded his first two picks back down, so he got more picks in return, one with the Bears, and now his new nickname in the room was Trader Dave. That's it.
Wait, didn't we just take Trader Dave out of the Splash Mountain ride?
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't that the one?
Yeah, no. What was his name?
Sailor?
Trader Sam?
Maybe Trader Sam.
Trader Sam. But you know that you're like, it's basically Dave Gettleman has been doing missionary his entire life. And one time he does reverse cowgirl and be like, Dave Gettleman fucks like a porn star.
Doggy Dave.
it's crazy.
Yeah, so the Giants, they did all kinds of moves. I'm looking at who they picked up this year.
Yeah.
I kind of like their draft.
Again, none of this matters.
No, it doesn't matter at all. If you look at the Nate Sudfeld game, the impact that that game is going to have in the NFC beast for like years to come is actually kind of crazy. That's our Elijah Moore dog pissing thing.
Yep.
It's just rolling Nate Sudfeld out on the game in week 17.
Repercussions. There will definitely
butterfly effect.
I wish we had Rick Riley still. I wish he was still alive because that would be a great lead into a Monday Night Football game in 5 years.
R.I.P.
Against, you know, the Washington football team and the Giants being like these two franchises.
Yep.
All because of one player.
Did you see what Trevor Lawrence said about Jacksonville?
No.
This is nice because I like Duval and I like Jags fans because they do stand up for their city because they get shit on a lot. You know, it's always been like, when are you going to move to London? You put in a hotel tax or is that going to keep you around or you draft another shit? They get shit on a lot.
You get an STD if you go in their pool.
Which is confirmed, allegedly.
My eyes have had herpes ever since.
Yeah, so they were asking Trevor Lawrence, like, do you think that you'll be able to, like, maximize the impact of your brand playing in a small market? And he goes, well, actually, if you look at the stats, by area, Jacksonville is one of the largest cities in the United States. So he was, and he's like, I don't know what small market you're talking about. If we're talking square miles.
I like that.
He's like busting out the electoral map. You know, when they show it, they're like, look at all this. Look at all this land out here.
This is mine.
That's what Trevor Lawrence is doing. I like Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville. I like him working with Urban Meyer. I think, I keep going back and forth, and I think I don't like Urban Meyer, but I think Trevor Lawrence is going to be good enough to make Urban Meyer's NFL career appear successful in hindsight.
The one thing I don't understand with the Jaguars draft is I read a story that they basically were in love with Kadarius Toney, which makes sense. Florida guy, wide receiver, like super speedster. And Urban Meyer, like a guy Urban Meyer would know how to scheme and use well. They loved him, and then the Giants took him at 20, and they took
Travis Etienne.
Etienne at 25. It's like, if you love them so much, running back is the one position you don't take in the first round. And I know there's obviously people can go back and forth. I think Najee Harris is going to be very good. I think Etienne's going to be very good.
Playoff Lenny's a Super Bowl champion.
Playoff Lenny's a Super Bowl champion.
First round pick.
Yeah. Like, it's, I don't know. It just feels like the running back position, you can usually find a guy who's 90% the abilities of a first round guy in the third and fourth.
But did he play with Trevor Lawrence in college, Big
Cat?
That's
true. Good point. Never mind. You're right. You're right.
It goes back to what we were saying on Friday. Sometimes it's good to just have one of your high draft picks have a buddy waiting for him. Just have him. He's got a friend waiting for him. He doesn't have to go through. He doesn't have to be lonely.
Yeah. Although, you know, Urban Meyer is going to be like, Trevor, like, I'm your friend.
Yeah.
We got to be friends. It's not like college anymore. We got to be friends first.
I'm not like other coaches. I'm a cool coach.
Yeah. Like, let's just
Urban Meyer
hang
gets
out.
Like a dangly earring and a necklace.
Here was a fun fact. Ready for this one? I still can't believe this. So the Bears took Virginia Tech running back Khalil Herbert, Herbert, if you want to go French on it.
I do.
The fact was, so Khalil has 11 toes. He has 11 toes. That's a crazy fact in its own right.
So he's faster.
He's faster. When he was at Kansas, he transferred from Kansas to Virginia Tech. Puka Williams was in the backfield. Puka Williams had an accident when he was growing up with a lawnmower. Puka Williams has a total of 5 toes. So they had two running backs with a total of 16 toes.
How do you have a running back that only has 5 toes?
And then in the same backfield with a running back with 11 toes.
Jesus Christ.
That's just a crazy... That one...
That draft...
That's a crazy...
That draft got an A-plus from Rex Ryan. Dude, 11 toes?
Yeah, 11... Well,
is it,
not the 5 toes.
Not
Puka
the 5
Williams
toe guy.
Is... Yeah.
But the 11 toe, so is it an extra pinky toe?
I think he had, I think it's like a fairly common thing where you have, I think he had six fingers too, but he got one removed.
Why would you get it taken off?
I don't know. I don't know. Probably you're not a freak.
Probably can't
don't like make fun of you.
Probably can't find good receiver gloves.
Yeah.
That have six on them.
Yeah. That would absolutely be it. But yeah, 11 toes and 5 toes.
So he's definitely better at cutting back. He's mm-hmm. That's an advantage from the running back position.
And I've always loved Virginia Tech. Everyone knows that.
Yeah, everyone knows. More player for you to tackle, though.
Yes.
If you have an extra appendage.
More players for more toes to get turf toe.
Yeah. Oh, that's
a problem.
The most deadly.
That's why you
got to
get Puka Williams.
He's
half as likely to get turf toe.
I would love
statistically.
That. Statistically. Yeah. And athlete's foot.
Mm-hmm. All right. Other things, other draft notes. Oh, I saw.
The Rams portrait of Roger Goodell.
Yep.
I thought that was extremely classy.
Yep. So we have one coming.
And then the Saints.
Chelsea.
The Saints did a little trolling of the Rams and of Goodell the next day. They hung up a picture in the background of Secretariat, where the picture of Goodell would have been. It would have been better if it was like the clown picture of Goodell that they had put up there. But Sean Payton is just, he's addicted to fucking with the league office.
Yes.
You guys are 100% certain it was trolling, right, by the Rams?
Yes.
It has to be.
Yes.
Or it's the greatest suck-up of all time.
Well, I think it all goes back to the NFC Championship. That's where it kind of makes sense, where it was the Rams and the Saints.
Yeah.
Because Goodell gave them the win. The Saints got fucked.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I've never seen that picture of Roger Goodell that they used for the painting.
It was offensive.
It was just from a press conference. I found it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The way he was like standing off the side, it looked like the portrait of George Washington in the White House.
It looked like when Paulie put, it wasn't Paulie. Who put Tony on his horse? Remember that?
I don't remember that. Are you talking about...
You're asking the wrong person.
Right, yeah. Are they talking about when they've got... What's his name?
Junior.
Billy Bats in the back of the car, and they pretty much killed him. And they're like, look at this guy. He's looking this way. Goodell's looking the other way. And this dog's like, what do you want from
me? Pyomai. Remember Pyomai?
Yeah.
And they drew Tony and made him look like a colonial figure.
It looked like a portrait of Goodell that Roger Goodell would honestly want to put on his own currency.
Yeah.
Like if the NFL ever goes to like their own, if they get on their own like crypto, he wants that on the picture of the coin.
We also need to just mention Goodell's chair really was the lamest thing ever. We just have to keep hammering because I think people are just letting him. This is what happens when you have Greeny interviewing him. Like, Greeny's first question should have been like, hey, dude, do you think you're fucking funny and cute?
He's going to sell an NFT of the chair.
Oh.
Second question, remember when you said you were going to donate to charity and have someone sit next to you in your man cave and no one ever did?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Good point. And we were going to double the donation.
Yeah, so I actually think that we should do the opposite and just keep talking about how awesome the chair was. And if we get enough people to fake talk about how great the chair was, he'll bring that fucking piece of shit out for every single league event for the next 30 years.
Yeah.
It'll be like, it's such a fan favorite.
Oh, it's going to be in fucking 50-yard line at the Super Bowl.
You can't boo the chair.
Oh, I'll boo the chair.
No.
I will boo the chair.
I will give a standing ovation to that chair. I want to see
that chair
show up all the time for every single event that Roger Goodell ever does because he believes it's the coolest thing ever.
I'll
no
put
cap.
A stick of dynamite in that chair.
Imagine if they were like traveling around to like Monday Night Football games and an AWL gave us the invite
and we could
steal
and
it.
We took it off the truck.
Steal it.
I think it's kind of problematic that Roger Goodell was sitting on the hide of a deceased animal on stage.
True.
I thought maybe let's get that the PETA people.
We can if the we Kentucky Derby, no less.
They'll throw red paint all over that.
Yeah.
Bucket.
Yes. Do we, Jake? Do you have any facts or anything that you noted from the draft? Who's Mr. Irrelevant?
I don't know.
Fuck.
That's a good question.
The draft, by the time you get to Saturday, it's like, all right, just let me know if any of these guys make the team.
Ernie Adams is done. Poor one out for the King. This
Grant
was his last
Stewart,
draft.
A linebacker from Houston, went to the Buccaneers.
Okay.
You guys said it too, the quarterback, but like when Sam Ellinger went to the Colts, I was like, oh.
Yeah, right.
Maybe he'll be good.
Pop
right.
up for a second. Right. Oh,
Ian Book to the Saints?
Oh, shit.
Wow.
Okay.
He's kind of undersized.
Yeah.
Wait, not very good.
Wait, Ernie's done?
Ernie's done. This was his last draft.
He said that?
As a Patriot. Well, Belichick said.
Also,
Ernie Adams
acting
might
performance
not have...
of the year from Belichick. Did you see it
with
his dog?
Dog?
Yes.
I mean,
do you also, I have
is it too late to give him a post-mostly Oscar?
I mean, he looked great with his dog.
Who died?
That was...
Or like, whatever, a belated Oscar. A belated
Did
Oscar.
Did he kill his dog?
No, a belated Oscar. The Oscars are dead because they happened already.
It's prelated for next year.
True.
Belichick explaining his draft. So I don't know if you saw the story, but he was asked a question, I think, on Thursday, and he was very Belichick, like, I can't explain to you how we grade players. And then I think he's getting a little nice in his old age. By the way, his explanation for how he grades players is, did he play for Nick Saban? Okay, he did. All right, draft him.
Mm-hmm.
But Belichick came back the next day and did a press conference and was like, hey, I was a little short with you guys. Let me explain it. Why I can't explain it. Here's the explanation of why he can't explain it. All right, he said, not trying to be evasive about the grading and all that, but I would just say that we don't grade players like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's just not, it's just not the way we do it. We use a combination of numbers, letters, colors, and these things all have different meanings depending on when they would indicate about the player's circumstance or situation or whatever it is involved with the player. So sometimes the color is going to override the number. Sometimes the letter is going to override the numbers or the colors and so forth. And so it's not, you know, this guy's an 85, this guy's an 83. It just doesn't work like that. There's a number, a color, possibly a letter or letters that go with those players. And those things could all, depending upon what they represent, could all override something else that's a part of the grade.
What the hell?
He created...
I think most of that's bullshit.
I just love to send sentence. So sometimes the color is going to override the numbers. Sometimes the letter is going to override the numbers or the colors and so forth.
He definitely has invented his own language that him and the five people in the building, they're the only ones that know how to speak.
It is. Yeah. We should get the guy who invented Dothraki and show him Belichick's grading. Can you make sense of this?
Belichickian is actually a language now with all this shit. It's code. It's like the Navajo code talkers in World War II.
Yeah.
Like he's invented... Through the combination of all these different variables, there's probably like 26,000 different things that can affect a single draft player's stock or the grade that they have.
I just like the idea that someone could be, so there's numbers and letters. So someone, a player could be an A100, but then their color is brown and you're like, no, can't do it.
It's crazy. So, like, with the rules that he's created, Belichick has essentially created quantum computing, but it's just about football players. Like, if his brain, stealing Matt Patricia away from NASA has got to be like one of the biggest all time like moves that might change history. And now we're just going to get even better at football in New England and worse at going to the moon.
Was Patricia in the war room?
Yeah. Well, he made one of the picks
because he kind of cleaned up, huh?
Yeah, he made one of the picks.
He got a haircut and everything. Yeah, he's in the program.
Yeah, that might be a punishment for the Patriots to make one of their assistants be the person that announces the picks.
Yes.
I actually found something cool that Warren Sharp tweeted this morning. It was years since drafting a quarterback in rounds 1 and 2, and 75% of the league has taken a quarterback in the first two rounds in the last 7 years. The Seahawks haven't drafted one in 28 years, and the Saints haven't drafted one in 50 years.
Whoa. That's crazy.
Wild.
50 years?
The Saints have not drafted a quarterback in rounds 1 and 2 in 50 years.
That is wild.
You know what else is wild? So our friend Sam Schwartzstein just sent this to me. The Jets drafted Hamza Nasrildeen with pick 186. The Bryce Brown trade is finally over after 7 years.
Oh, wow.
So every single year since Bryce Brown was drafted, there has been a player drafted using one of the picks that was acquired during that trade that eventually got swapped. So, like, 7 years, 8 years, I guess, seven drafts from now, the Bryce Brown trade tree is finally, it's been felled.
Perfect.
Got chopped down.
I like that. That finally we can get a conclusion.
We can move on.
Well, we can grade it now.
The Bryce Brown.
Well, as soon as this player gets out there, and we can grade it as soon as we figure out if this player is good or not.
It looks like every player, Carson Wentz was involved in it through the middle. So, Kiko Alonso.
The blowjob story is
that
just
increases
worth it
trade
alone.
Value.
Yeah,
I'd say I'm going to give this one to Philly. I think the Eagles won the Bryce Brown trade.
Yes. All right. Any other draft notes? Again, the grading of the drafts. I think everyone, basically, when you wake up on Sunday or Monday morning after the draft, you do the same thing that everyone else does as NFL fans. You go and you look at the draft grades. You see your team's draft grade. If it's anything less than an A-, you get mad at the person who's grading it, and then you get mad at the GM. And then you go and see your rival's draft grade, and if it's anything higher than a B, you get mad at that.
It's
and
bias.
Then,
yeah.
And then we just do the season, and we find out how everyone was wrong. I think there was – I always remember the Jaguars – got an A-plus draft grade like 4 years in a row. And this is pre – this isn't like when they actually had a really good team a few years ago in the ACC. I'm talking like it was like – I don't know, like 2009, 10, 11, mm-hmm. and it was just always terrible drafts, but they always got graded A+.
And there's always that Seahawks draft from 2012 where they got Russell Wilson, and they picked up like some Bruce Irvin.
Yeah.
And Bleacher Report gave it an F.
I think Cam Chancellor too, right?
It might have been, yeah, they're like, they reached for these guys. Russell Wilson might not ever see the field. Grade F.
And it was like the greatest draft of all time.
Yeah, the best draft.
In terms of value.
At least in the history of that franchise.
Yes, yes. Oh, yeah, the Seahawks also got a guy who runs a 4-3, so they're just going to have the fastest team ever.
That's kind of the
and
Raiders.
It's just a new Doug Baldwin.
The Raiders move. The Raiders will reach for any player that is, you know, 0.5% faster mm-hmm. than the rest of his position class. Although I do think it might be Mike Mayock just doing a solid for all the scouting community and the people that do the draft grades, because he used to be a part of that community.
Right.
And so he might just create these controversial picks just to give them some stuff to write about.
Right.
You know, throw them a little red meat every now and again.
That's true.
But they've got the Ouija board that's connected to Al Davis's spirit that just tells them draft a fast player.
Draft him.
And
yes.
draft. They've been drafting a shitload of cornerbacks, too. And it's funny because that's that one position that we always say, like, you don't know if it's going to – if it works, you'll find out 5 years later.
Right.
And they've drafted a defensive back, I think, every year for like the last 8 years. And there's always been the same criticism, which is you reach for this guy. And the draft graders and analysts are always correct about the Raiders.
Yes.
But they're,
yes.
they're just not going to forget. They're not going to stop trying.
Right.
They'll get
it right. All right. So we had the Kentucky Derby as well. Hopefully you listened to our OG Randy Moss on Friday's show, because we talked at length about the winning horse.
Always interesting. You can tell when there's new listeners, because there was still a good amount of people that were like, wait, you didn't have the real Randy Moss on? This is bullshit.
And he was actually, I think, maybe the sixth guest on the show. Mm-hmm. So he and shout out to his son, because I remember when the Kentucky Derby was happening in 2016, when the show was like 2 months old, and I tweeted out like, does anyone know this Randy Moss? Because we want to have him on. And his son was like, that's my dad, and he hooked us up. And friendship ever since. But we did talk about Bob Baffert at length, and we talked about the Tom Brady corollaries, where they're going for their seventh title, and then lo and behold, 12-1. I bet on them. I never win the Derby. It was I have to say this to everyone listening right now, if you've never won the Derby, I'd recommend doing it. It was a lot of fun.
I remember
I'd never done it. Yeah. And then Saturday I decided to do it. And I won 12-1, and it was way more fun than losing it.
You'll always remember the name of that horse.
Yeah.
I still remember.
Medina, wait.
Spirit?
Spirit.
I remember Mind That Bird. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget that name as long as I live. But
Mind That Bird.
We also had Aaron Rodgers at the Derby.
So.
He was.
He looked skinny,
he
man.
Looked he looked like a goth magician who will make your daughter's virginity disappear. Mm-hmm. Like a pickup artist.
Yeah. He's rolling around in what's his name's crew,
Mystery. Neil Strauss,
yeah,
Matador.
He looks skinny. I think he's probably, this is what happens when you get held captive. So I did have a very tough moment when he did his interview and he was wearing a name tag that said Turd Ferguson, and I obviously my initial reaction to anything Aaron Rodgers does is that's lame. I fucking hate his guts. But it made me laugh, so I didn't tweet about it. And that's if you have nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all.
Did you notice the type of hat he was wearing?
Yeah.
It was a derby hat. Get it?
Mm-hmm.
I bet he got a lot of mileage out of that one.
He is really, really unhappy, though.
He does look skinny.
He looks skinny.
I don't think he's been eating.
He has not been eating. They need to let him free.
Can you imagine that if Aaron Rodgers actually went on a hunger strike to get traded? I actually think it would work.
I do, too. I keep going back and forth because it does feel more serious than it ever has. And they've obviously had this issue, like, kind of bubbling for a while now. It does feel more significant than it ever has been. But I still don't, like, the Packers aren't going to trade him, right?
Well, he's trying to get the GM fired now.
And also now the spots, like, there's not a lot of openings.
Apparently that's something that, I mean, you hear about it happening a lot with players and coaches trying to get each other fired. But you don't hear about it with a general manager. So people got mad, especially Mike Florio, got real mad at Aaron Rodgers because you don't talk about another man's job.
Correct.
And a guy, how do you pronounce his name? Is it Gutekunst?
Yeah.
Gutekunst? You can't fire that guy from being the general manager of the Packers. That guy just His name alone just...
No.
It exudes Midwest German.
He was born out of a cheese curd on a fish fry Friday.
His blood type is spotted cow.
Yeah, it wasn't a natural birth.
And butter.
It was an egg that was hatched, and that egg was a cheese curd.
So, yeah, he's trying to get him fired, apparently. And that's making some people mad for talking about another man's job. But it really sounds like Matt LaFleur, he wants Aaron Rodgers back. And he's just – Matt LaFleur is the one that I'm more worried about because he sounded more depressed than Aaron Rodgers recently.
Yes.
Because he's like, I've let my mind finally go to that dark place where Aaron might not be our quarterback in September, and I don't like thinking about it. I don't know what I'm going to do with myself.
How about being Jordan Love in this situation? When you – like, no, obviously Aaron Rodgers, MVP, so clearly he's way better than Jordan Love, but you still drafted Jordan Love in the first round, and everyone is pretending like the – franchise will end if Aaron Rodgers retires.
Yeah,
that's got to suck.
Well, plus you also know you've already burned one of your years into the 16-year lifespan of Green Bay Packers quarterback.
Yep.
So it's like you just feel his biological clock is ticking right now. So he's only got 15 more years where he can contribute to the team.
It's also just, I mean, we always talk about like the guy who follows the guy. How about the guy who follows Favre and Rodgers?
Yeah.
That's got to suck. You have to be a Hall of Famer.
You have to.
Like you... You have to be.
How hilarious would it be, though, if the Packers just started winning based on defense and just running the football?
Fuck that.
Probably not that funny for you. But I do think Aaron Rodgers, I know you listen to the show, know you're big stoolie. Do a public hunger strike.
Mm-hmm.
Have a live cam on you.
Yeah.
Like, do a stream and prove that you're not going to eat anything until either they fire this guy or you get traded to whatever.
Or he dies. Which, if you die,
I hope, heaven forbid.
Here's what I'll say. If Aaron Rodgers dies on a hunger strike trying to leave the Packers, I will I'll do a moment of silence.
Okay. You'll do a hunger strike
for
2 hours.
No, I'll do a moment of silence. One moment of silence. A moment of silence for Aaron Rodgers. It is.
I actually think it would work. And if anybody is the type of personality to try doing like a Gandhi technique,
yeah,
it's Aaron Rodgers.
Well, a lot of people are saying that Aaron Rodgers doesn't have the balls to do it.
No, I've heard that. I've heard people saying that
he'll keep eating meals.
No, they didn't necessarily say the balls. They just said the mental toughness or the intellectual. They said Aaron Rodgers is not intellectually curious enough.
He's too
to
dumb.
Try to hunger strike.
Right. He's too dumb
so
to hunger
we'll
strike.
I tend to agree with those people, but I'd like to be proven wrong.
Yeah, without a doubt. All right, let's do our who's back of the week. We have Eddie George coming up. Awesome, awesome interview with Eddie George. Whether you're searching for a home to buy or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can find the home that's just right for you. You can favorite homes, share listings with others, and even schedule tours with a local Redfin agent all in the app. When you're ready to buy, an experienced local Redfin agent can guide you through the whole process. So download the Redfin app today to get started.
I got a couple who's backs. The first one, LaMelo Ball.
Okay.
He came back, he had a crazy full court pass on Friday night. He just had another one like 2 minutes ago. That might be better. It was basically like a football throw, like 90 yards.
Is LaMelo making passing cool
feet,
again?
I guess. He's back. They're going to make a playoff run. He's definitely. I've been a LaMelo Ball fan.
Buzz City.
I've been a LaMelo Ball fan on this show going back years and years.
You actually have.
So I'm always rooting for him. He's fun to watch. My other who's back of the week is crowd fights.
You wait. Can I just say one thing about LaMelo Ball? The thing that is that ruined LaMelo Ball, and I agree, he's fun to watch and he's very very awesome. He should win Rookie of the Year. Was that one video where he was just bricking threes from half court? Remember that?
Mm-hmm. He was in like.
I know.
A sophomore, though.
I know.
That's
and
what's crazy.
I used all my draft analysis on that one video.
You know what's crazy?
So, like, that's... I don't blame myself. It was definitely not my fault. It was whoever made that video.
What's Steph Curry's lifetime percentage from three? Is it, like, 41, 42%?
Yeah.
So that means that he bricks 60% of the shots
he takes.
Yeah,
these were bricks.
I know, but I'm saying, like, you could cut together a pretty sick highlight reel of Steph Curry bricking shots and just call it 40, Steph Curry sucks.
4.
But do you remember this video?
Yeah,
it was like half court. That was prime
Lamar Ball. Everyone was coming after LeVar.
Haters are your marketing team.
That's how I did my draft analysis of him, so I was wrong. Hand up.
Wait, Seth Curry has a higher three-point percentage than his brother.
Yeah, he's better. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can show you a highlight clip that'll prove it.
Absolutely. Also, speaking of Buzz City, that someone I saw a tweet from Terry Rozier in like 2011 talking about how hot Seth Curry's mom was. So that's always just funny when that, you know, gets back in the echelon.
I mean, he wasn't wrong.
No, no. crowd fights.
Seems like a nice lady.
Andy Ruiz Jr., Chris Areola. I don't know how his name is spelled. Areola. They had a boxing match in, I think it was L.A. in the Coliseum, and there was a crowd fight. No security came over for like 20 minutes. It was basically just a full-on. Like, guys were just getting smoked. Nature's healing. People are back. This was crazier than any UFC fight I've seen.
Yeah.
One guy was just taking, probably took like 35 body blows, like hard punches, and there was just no security. Like, it was one of those videos where you watch and you see, when you see a fight break out, you see a few punches get thrown, and then you're like, all right, it's going to get broken up. Someone's going to come.
Right.
It's just a quick little, like, tiff. This was 3 to 5 minutes of just, like, body blows, full headshots, everything.
I think that's fine, though, at a boxing event. Like, if you go to a baseball game, you bring your glove with you. You might, like, play some catch in the concourse or whatever. If you go to a boxing event and a boxing match breaks down the stands, that's just more bang for your buck.
Mm-hmm.
I say let that play out. And also, I think, like, COVID has brought a different perspective to security guards where they see people fighting each other and they're like, fuck that. I'm not going to get involved in that.
Right.
Why would I go insert myself into two strangers breathing and bleeding on each other? I'll just let them. They're going to tire out eventually.
Yeah. Fighting in, like, UFC needs more fighting in the stands.
Yeah.
Why not?
I feel like they have a good amount, probably.
I feel like they don't show it. They need to show it more.
Yeah, they do. Also, I had this idea over the weekend. We were talking about how, like, Jake Paul, UFC, there's some beef going on there. Why doesn't Dana White just fight Jake Paul in MMA?
If he lost, I think he'd have to give up all of the
all
UFC.
The shares?
Yeah. Yeah. That would be a reputation match.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't do that if you're him. I would love to see it happen, but you can't do it. All right, what else?
That was it.
That was it?
Okay. I mean, there's multiple.
Just two?
Two.
For who's back?
Just two of them.
All right, okay.
My who's back of the week is the Snake Pit. Snake Pit's back. There was a golf tournament. Max Homa finished lower than we thought he was going to finish. Tough break for the homosexuals. Yeah. He was two strokes back going into the final round. Three strokes back?
Ten strokes back.
He all made a real on moving day.
Late rally. Finished sixth.
So it was tough, but I'm sure he collected a nice paycheck. But the name of the course had their finishing holes, 16, 17, 18. They just called him the Snake Pit. And the Snake Pit is such a cool thing to call anything.
Yeah.
Except an actual pit of snakes.
Yes.
But you can call anything a snake pit, and it sounds fucking ferocious. And they showed it on television, and it was just like a nice, lovely end of a round of golf. There was nothing menacing about it at all.
Right.
But Jim Nantz is like, he's wandering into the snake pit. We'll see if he can survive.
Oh, man.
It gets you going.
The snake pit at
Indy 500,
that's a snake pit.
It is a snake
pit.
That's
a real snake pit.
That's just where you go to, like, party on Saturday,
right?
So
carb
day?
No, on Sunday. Carb day is Friday.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
And then my other...
Not eating a bunch of carbs. We found that out, and it sucked.
It was honestly disappointing.
When you show up to carb day, and you're like, all right, where's the pizza? Where's the donuts? And they're like, no. Carburetor.
Yeah, funnel cakes, at least. Then who's back of the week is True Love at the Arizona Diamondbacks game. Did you guys see this? I was about to
jump across this table and beat your face
back.
In.
Since you brought it up, Bennifer is back. The couple that brought us G-Lee
is
finally back.
So pathetic from J-Lo. So pathetic.
Doesn't he have an Oscar?
What?
Ben Affleck?
Absolutely.
Yeah, he's got an Oscar.
Does he?
He's a great director.
Oh, yeah, for
he got one for Good Will Hunting.
Good Will Hunting.
And, no, I think he got one for Argo, too.
And also the...
I think G-Glee might have won.
It won everything.
The
best movie of all time.
Accountant's the worst movie ever, but it's such a good watch.
I love that Ben Affleck if he's directing a movie, he'll put a scene in where he's just shirtless exercising.
Yes.
And I think every time he does that, it's just a shot directly at J-Lo. Like, take me back. Although I do love... He's a man after your own heart in a way, Big Cat. You've seen all the pictures of him carrying the stacks of Dunkin' Donuts into his house for Donut Saturdays.
Yeah. But those weren't donuts. There was just coffee.
No, he's got donuts in the thing, too.
He does?
He's a big ambassador for Donut Saturday.
Okay.
And Dunkin' Donuts in general, which I respect because, you know, it doesn't get a lot of love outside of Boston, and it should.
I feel like Dunkin' Donuts had its moment.
Yeah.
It should still have its moment.
It's still far the superior still going?
than
Krispy
Kreme? Other places, yeah.
Actually, I was going to say something about a different coffee place, but you know what? Corporate cat, not going to say it because we might advertise someday.
Yeah,
I was going to not Dunkin' Donuts, but somewhere else.
I'm off now.
I'm not off it because you don't know what I'm talking about.
Money in the solar system.
I fucking hate bleep that out.
Me too.
Are we still advertising for Dunkies?
No, They should come back.
They should. Yes. Yeah, much like J-Lo came back to Ben Affleck.
So pathetic. Yeah. So pathetic.
But true love.
Did you see, by the way, A-Rod like lost a shitload of weight from December to right now?
Yeah.
And it was like, stay committed, do all this. Juice? And someone found out, like, they're like, or you could do the A-Rod diet, and he went to a gym that was literally $4,000 for like 1 month. It's like, okay, well, that too.
By the way,
why can't everyone be like me?
All right, I'm gonna pull an audible. Jake, you can explain the Arizona Diamondbacks thing if you want to.
Yeah, he wasn't fat.
Another who's back is Fake Butts. I have a theory. This is going to be the summer of Fake Butts. The Roaring Twenties. There are a lot of people that
Who are you talking about? Better not be Rachel Bush.
Should I cop one?
Nope. Maybe
her vaccine thoughts aside.
I think the whole squad should get fake asses, because my theory is that a lot of people got elective cosmetic surgery during this year that the world hit pause. And this summer, you're going to see a lot of fake asses that come out of nowhere. And they're the most funny thing to see in the wild. I saw, I think, 5 fake asses at one restaurant last weekend.
Why were you
weekend.
Looking, PFT? Keep your eyes
bonk,
up here.
Bonk.
I couldn't help but notice. Because they were bonking my drink off my table when they were trying. Can I scoot by you there real quick? Then boom, fucking asshole knocks
just
over my Manhattan.
What type of drink was it?
Manhattan.
Can I ask?
I thought you were doing whatever your drinks are.
Oh, my novelties?
Yeah.
But not every restaurant. I've actually gotten a lot of strange looks at fancy establishments being like, do you have any like crazy novelty fishbowl cocktails? And they're like, sir, you're already wearing sweatpants, really pushing the limits of our dress code. I'll have to ask you to stop.
Can I throw something out there, because we're in the trust tree and no judging? I am terrible at judging fake asses and fake tits. I see a pair of fake tits, I'm like, look at those naturals.
Yep.
And I'm always wrong.
I can't.
Like, I remember the day when someone like was like, dude, Jenna Jameson, like, those are fake tits. I'm like, what? Are you serious? I'm really bad at it.
If milk comes out, then they're real.
It's
That's
just,
the only thing
I can't.
I know.
For some, I maybe it's that I, you know what? Maybe I just don't judge. Maybe it's the heart wants what the heart wants. But if you show me a pair of very clearly fake tits, I will absolutely think they're real.
I'm 100% in that same boat with you. There have been people that like I've given a hug to, and then later my friend is like, those tits are so fake, they're so hard. And I'd be like, I really could not tell. Like, my chest does not have that nerve.
Yeah,
I had to give him a major bonk.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So I wouldn't be able to tell you if there's a fake ass anyway.
You know a fake ass.
No.
Fake ass is
I'm telling you right now.
Spotable.
I do not. When I see an when I see an ass that's huge and it might be fake, I'm just thinking, like, well, is she using the blue bands or the purple bands?
I'm telling you.
What is she doing? What's her squat?
20 years from now, we're going to look back at this era in the United States and be like, what the fuck was everyone thinking just getting shit injected into their ass cheeks?
Yeah.
Really strange. But I think they're going to be back this summer. Just something to put in the tickler file. Keep an eye out for.
I won't be able to tell. All right. My who's back, soccer hooligans, or whatever happened at Man United today. I love it. Save soccer. They invaded the pitch. I think they were violent. I think some people got fucked up. Also love the, like, few random guys who brought a ball with them just so they could kick it around.
They were taking PKs.
Yeah. And then here's what I don't understand. I know Troops explained it all. Super League, bad idea. We get it. I agree with that. But if the Glazers sold, another billionaire would buy the team, and then we'd be in the same spot in like 5 years.
Probably.
Like,
But I think their point is we'd rather have an asshole who is from England than an asshole who is from America.
But that asshole from England would be like, oh, that would be like saying for the Sonics, like, we want a guy from Seattle, Howard Schultz. Oh, how'd that work out? Like, eventually the bottom line will be the bottom line, no matter where you're from or who you root
for.
And
if you look at history, rich British assholes have done probably 50 times the damage to the world that Americans have.
A very easy way to live your life is to understand that
R.I.P. Prince Philip.
Very rich people will do anything to stay rich and get richer, and they don't have, like, you think they might have a heart in them. You might think they have, like, ooh, fandom. No. They don't give a fuck.
Mm-hmm.
They do not give a fuck.
I think it just comes down to the fact they don't like, when American fucks up their sport, they're like, we really hate that.
I just got to remind them, the fucking Glazers won a Super Bowl 3 months ago.
It was very funny listening to the people on, was it Sky Sports or whatever, like NBC Sports Network, talk about what was happening in like very hushed, solemn tones, because they had defiled the sanctity of Old Trafford Stadium.
Old Trafford, yes.
And
which has been renovated like 75 times.
Some of the cops that were there were just like letting them in, because I think the cops also want the Glazers to sell the team.
Yes.
And I saw one police officer walking across the pitch, and he was just bleeding from one of his eyes.
Yeah.
But he was smiling. He was like, this is fucking awesome.
This is sick.
Having a great time.
Yeah. So that is back. And then my other who's back is Lou Dort. So mm-hmm. the Thunder lost 152-95 on Saturday night. That is, I think that's the biggest margin of defeat ever. It's incredible when you actually look at the box score, just how they didn't win a single quarter. They were getting hot in the fourth. They lost 26-25 in the fourth. But I freaked when I saw this because I was like, oh no, Lou Dort, my king, he didn't play. So I just want to remind everyone, he didn't play. If he had played, they probably would have won the game.
Well, he averages like 60.
That's not even it. PFT, people were making that joke like, oh, Lou Dort, you think Lou Dort? Dude,
no,
Lou
Dort would put
you in the Dortcher chamber. Don't score 152 on Lou Dort.
I just said Lou Dort is a prolific scorer. The game does change.
No, but it's his defense.
Yeah.
His defense is what would stop them.
Okay.
He doesn't need to score for his team to win.
Gotcha.
He can just fucking lock him down.
You can't put a mathematical equation to explain the significance of Lou Dort on a basketball game.
It is very funny, though, to look at the plus-minus, and like Sabonis for the Pacers was a +49.
Mm-hmm.
That's impressive.
But seriously, there is something about Dort.
There's a lot about
Dort.
Doesn't
exist on the stat sheet.
It's
like
dude.
You can't write a computer program to tell you what love is.
He is absolutely the best on-ball defender. He will lock you down. Lou Dort is, he's the best. Dortcher chamber. So don't, anyone who's trying to tell you that the Thunder suck, they do, but not because of Lou Dort. All right, Jake.
Do you want to explain that Diamondbacks thing?
You can probably explain it better than I could.
I'm just going to read through the thread.
Yeah, go for it.
So this guy, Buck Army, who has 100,000 plus on YouTube, according to his bio, said, hey, at D-backs, my roommate's on a state, 6 rows above the plate. Would love to see the cameraman a bit. And then the D-backs refer him to Bally Sports, the network. Now the D-back says, we're curious.
Let me take over real quick for you, Jake. Give like a little bit of background.
Okay,
this YouTuber, his buddy went on a date at a Diamondbacks game, and then he was like, hey, Diamondbacks, can you put the camera on my friend? He's on his first date. I want to see how he's doing. Asking them to, like, put him on TV.
Right.
So he could check in on his buddy. And they eventually, like, found him, and it became, like, this big viral moment. But I also have a big stay woke on it. Like, the fact that it was a famous YouTuber that was setting this up.
Right.
In conjunction with three separate brands.
Right.
At once. It set off a lot of alarms for me.
Yes. Agreed.
But apparently they're going on a second date. Apparently they hit it off.
Yeah.
It would be very funny, like, if it wasn't set up and the camera panned to them and he was just, like, getting a hand job from her in the crowd.
Jake, did you have your own who's back?
Yeah. Anderson Varejao.
What?
Cavs.
Yeah?
This stopped me in my tracks.
Yeah.
Is he the president of Brazil now?
He plans to sign with the Cavs. I got to see the last time he played.
Wait, what?
Yes.
Yeah.
He's Anderson Varejao is signing back with the Cavs, the team he played 13 years for or something. I literally thought he stopped playing in like 2016.
He has not played since 2016-17 with the Warriors.
Holy shit.
Right, he did the double ring. He did the double ring thing. Yeah. He was like the guy who's like, he gets rings for both teams or whatever.
Yeah, that's right. And they like had to vote on whether or not he got the ring or something because he left midway in the
fuck?
Season.
That's incredible.
I have no idea how Dan Gilbert runs his organization. Like, is he just drunk all the time?
Yeah, well, he had a health problem.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
I didn't mean to make you feel bad. It's such and go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, is he okay? Is he alive? It would make more sense if he wasn't.
Oh,
like,
man.
The Cavs are good for, like, three of these moves a year. Where you're just like, is this a professional sports team in Cleveland?
What, is there 10 games left? Is it a PR thing? Just to live
great
through
PR.
The past?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's crazy. How old is he?
Watch
it be like 28. And we just were wrong with
38.
38, okay. All right. That's nuts. Hey, so, once a Cav, always a Cav. Cav for life, right?
Yeah. And then PFT's boy Steve Kornacki is back.
Oh, yeah.
He's the only NBC analyst to pick the correct derby winner.
Oh, he had him?
Yeah.
What was the name?
Steve Kornacki.
Medina Spirit.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'll always remember Medina Spirit.
I'm sick of that guy. His fucking khakis.
Dude, it's crazy how much he looks like Roan.
It's
insane.
The hatred,
every time I see him, I'm like, why is Roan on my TV?
The hatred that Jeff D. Lowe has for Steve Kornacki is, unrivaled by anything I've ever seen.
Why? Just nerd on nerd
no, he
crime?
Just, no, he just hates that they treat
nerds
him
like, do hate other nerds.
Yeah, well, he hates that they treat him like a freak, which yeah. I understand. It's like, let's get this freak out here to talk about his freak numbers and go back to your basement when you're done, freak.
But nerds definitely like have a feeling like there's only enough room for one of us nerds here. Mm-hmm. They don't like that.
Hey, it's PFT here talking about Peloton. Starting is everything when it comes to fitness. Peloton encourages you to get moving by doing what you can. Peloton helps you start no matter what level you're at. That's why they have instructors who motivate you from day one with thousands of classes from all levels to get you started. I love my Peloton. I'm back on the Buns of Anarchy. I've been back on the bike if you want to join Buns of Anarchy. Wherever you're starting, get moving with a Peloton bike or Bike Plus rental at www.onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply.
Here he is, Eddie George. Okay, we now welcome on a very special guest. It is Heisman Trophy winner, four-time Pro Bowler, but most importantly, he is the head coach of Tennessee State now. It is Eddie George. Let's start there. Are you used to people calling you coach yet? Because this is you just jumped right into the job, and part of the job of being a coach is everyone around town calling you coach. Are you ready for that? Are you cool with that?
You know, I'm cool with it, but I'm not used to it yet. People are like, hey, coach. I'm like, who's here? You know, like, who's coach? But I'm getting used to it. It's really a tremendous honor to be a head coach, for someone to look at me in this regard and to say, hey, you know, I want you to take over my program. There's a lot of trust involved in that, one. Oftentimes, you may not see something in yourself. Somebody might see something in you that you don't see in yourself. And after doing my due diligence on the opportunity, doing some soul searching, you know, I had a chance to talk to Dion, a few other players, a few other head coaches, a few other businessmen about what this means, what it entails, what it involves. You know, can I do this, put my whole mind, body, mind and spirit into this give 100%. I came to the conclusion that I can do it, you know, and this is the next thing that's presented for me. It's a great challenge, a great opportunity, but more importantly, it's about impacting lives of young men, of our student athletes. And that's something that I've been doing my entire life, you know, in some roundabout way, whether it be my own sons, whether it be talking to a group of kids, doing my speaking engagements and so forth. It's something that I know. I know the game of football. I played it for practically my whole life. And it brings me back full circle into the very person that I loved growing up and made a profession out of, but just in a completely different capacity. So it's a wonderful opportunity.
You mentioned that you talked to Deion Sanders. He's our coworker here, and he is the head coach at Jackson State.
We're
head of recruiting there, so we can't. You can be, I guess, we'll see how this interview goes before we determine whether or not we want to work with you in any capacity on that front. But I'm curious how that convo went with Deion, because you guys played against each other. I have to imagine, you probably ran Deion over once or twice is what I'm getting at. He wasn't exactly a hitter. So how is that relationship now? Is he always like, does he look at you?
Exactly. Like, Prime, we never hit. He never... I don't think I've ever ran into Deion, maybe in a Pro Bowl, but we never hit, you know. So the only time I saw Prime was when he was catching the interception. I was trying to hit him, and he was running the other way. Right. So that was it. But, of course, listen, you know, Prime is Prime, period. You know, I grew up a Prime fan when he was at Florida State. I remember being at a military school, and we would go sneak and watch the games. And they were playing against Clemson. And I remember, you know, sneaking and watch that one clip when he's pointing to the sidelines, telling him he's going to run it back. And I wanted Clemson to win so bad that day. And he said, he's going to run it back. Gets the ball, runs it back for a touchdown, and it was all over. And I just remember him, you know, just growing up, been a big fan of him. So I'm not surprised that, you know, when Prime took this opportunity, took this position, I reached out to him and I congratulated him. I was like, wow, this is a huge deal for him. Not knowing that I was going to be the next guy to be offered the opportunity. So Prime is a trendsetter. He's always has been. He's always been about helping others, especially young black men, reach their fullest potential, not just on the football field, but also off the football field. And that was some of the similar things that I'm aligned with as well. And that's some of the things that I believe in. And when I reached out to him and really got his unvarnished truth of what goes into this, he was very honest up front with me. He says, it's not going to be easy. You know, it's a different way of doing business, but it's something you definitely can do. You get the right people around you. You will be the CEO of a business pretty much. And that's how you're going to have to operate, but you can be very successful in it, except against him. That's what he was saying.
Yeah. So our listeners are going to be mad that we've gotten this far in the interview and we haven't mentioned the most important person in your circle of trust when it comes to, you know, jumping into the coaching world. It is our best friend, Jeff Fisher. Maybe a story, something that you've always thought of, like, this is how you should coach, from your time playing for Coach Fisher, that you're going to now bring into, you know, your guys at Tennessee State?
Oh, wow. That is such a great question. Jeff, I reached out to him and I was hoping that he would talk me off the ledge of this thing. Okay. I was on the fence. I was about, you know, 70-30 of not doing this. Okay. And I said, before I close the door on it, before I give them a hard no and say, hey, this is not for me, go find somebody else that's passionate about it, blah, 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 ran down on my reasoning. I called him on my way out to a golf tournament going to Florida to play concession. And I said, hey, I'm on the tarmac, I'm about to leave, you know, but this is what I got going on. I've been offered, listen to this ridiculous idea, Jeff. I got offered to be the head coach of Tennessee State University and with no coaching experience. And I'm expecting him to be like, yeah, let that go. Just, you know, man, hey, go play golf, stay down there, don't get involved. Instead, you know how he is. He's, oh, my God, Eddie, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. You will absolutely kill it. And I've got everything laid out for you. I've got my organizational sheets. I've got practice sheets. I've got a staff. I've got a chief of staff. He's going through the whole thing of how this can be successful. And Jeff knows how to push my buttons because he was my coach. I mean, he knew how to get me going, right? And by the end of the conversation, I went from 70-30 in terms of not doing it to be in all in at the end of a 30-minute conversation. So, you know, Jeff has a way of presenting things in such a peaceful, calm, and collective way. And he'll have you looking at something that's half empty is half full. He's an optimistic guy. So I think I'll take bits and pieces from his style in terms of how he coaches. He is not one to embarrass anybody or to berate anyone. But he's definitely a player's coach. And anybody that's played for Jeff can definitely say that you know, he's probably the best coach they ever played for because of how he approaches players and how he deals with people in relationships.
He's a very zen guy. At the end of the conversation, was he like, and by the way, if you're hiring, I happen to know a guy, me, if you want to bring me on. Has he floated there for you?
I had to talk him into, hey, man, listen. You know, if I'm going to do this, I'd like to do it with you in some capacity. I don't know how that looks for you. I know that he was trying to get into college football coaching, didn't have the opportunity to go to Tennessee or Auburn and all of that. But I think he's excited being a senior advisor in this capacity and just really helping me along the way, put the rails down or the bricks down for this foundation of what we can do here at Tennessee State University.
That's very cool.
So when you're coaching, are you going to have a doghouse? Because I asked that question because people forget that you won a Heisman. You were, you know, a first-round pick. Mm-hmm. You had an unbelievable career in the NFL. But there was a point in time where you were in the doghouse, probably the longest doghouse of all time, for a year and a half at Ohio State because you fumbled twice your freshman year on the 5-yard line against Illinois in the same game. And then you went to the doghouse for a year and a half. Is that right? You basically were sidelined for a year and a half. What does the doghouse feel like for a year and a half?
Well, the doghouse is cold. It's dark. There's no light. It's unforgiving. It feels like the world is closing in on you. But I was molded by that. I grinded that. I had to. I had to find a new belief in it. I had to find my own light in the darkness of the doghouse. So absolutely, you got to have a doghouse for somebody to ask the question, hey, am I man enough to pursue this dream? Do I have the guts to continue to pursue and to persist without exception? You know, so you without the doghouse, you got to have a guy to go in there and really find out who he is and bring forth the best out of you. So to me, that's where I won the Heisman. I made up in my mind that, hey, you know what? This is not going to define me. I could have left. I could have went to a different school. I could have jumped in the portal and tried to find a perfect situation, or I can make the situation there at Ohio State perfect for me by attacking it, by taking ownership of it, by working out hard every day, by showing up at 8 o'clock in the morning and leaving at 8 in the evening, working on my weaknesses, working on my strengths, studying film, doing any and everything that will separate me from the rest of my competition. That's what I was going to do, and that's what I did. So, yes, there will be a doghouse.
Did Coach John Cooper at Ohio State, did he ever apologize for putting you in the doghouse? Because he's had to feel stupid after that, where your sophomore year you have 42 attempts, and then your junior year you have 276 attempts. And it's like, wait, we could have probably used him last year a little bit. That was mistake to keep him in the doghouse that long.
Well, let's be clear. You know, at Ohio State, you can't afford to fumble. You can't afford to get hurt because the next guy in line is just as good as you. I played with Robert Smith, Raymond Harris, Butler Benote, Jeff Cothran. They were all upperclassmen. So they all went to the NFL at some point in time. So it was talented. So they said, listen, we know what we have in you. You want to sit in here. You want to sit back and watch, learn how it's done, watch these upperclassmen take stake, because we're not going to lose. I'm not going to lose my job because you can't hold on to the football. So it was about job security with John Cooper, and I appreciate that. So, I don't think he felt stupid behind it. No, I think he was just a talented backfield to say, hey, this guy's got some time, and let him grow and develop into become the player that he hopes to be.
That's humble, but you were the best running back in that backfield. You won a Heisman Trophy.
Well, yeah. Now you say that, yeah.
Very humble of you. I like
but
that.
But who knows? If you weren't in the doghouse for that long, you might not have reached that point.
True.
It made you hungry, right?
Right.
You weren't eating when you were out in the doghouse.
You're like Bane. He's molded by the doghouse.
Exactly. What you should do is, as a motivational technique, you should get a doghouse and put it on the sideline for your players.
Yes.
But not for your running backs. Like, for your defense, every time they force a fumble, you put that guy in the doghouse, and you come back to the sideline.
You put the ball in the doghouse.
Yeah, you fill the doghouse up with the balls on the sideline.
I like that. I like that a lot. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to take you up on it. Now, I have to get a big doghouse to do that.
Yeah.
You know anybody? You know a good builder that can build a good looking doghouse
in Tennessee,
and make it really, yeah.
Mm. Will Compton probably won't be doing anything next year.
You know what? He might not be. Well, you never know.
Just kidding. He's a friend of ours.
He went back. He played for him last year.
Yeah. Yes,
so
I know. He's going to be on a roster. He will be on a roster. That was a cheap shot.
He would actually be a great carpenter. Speaking of cheap shots, maybe Taylor Luan.
Yeah,
he's probably not going to play next year. He'll be suspended for a while.
Hey, I can come Bruce Taylor out to be my offensive line coach.
Yeah, we're just roasting our guys right now. Love it.
I'm curious. I'm curious about another guy that you played with for a long time. One of our favorite NFL players in the history of the league on this show, Lorenzo Neal, best fullback, best blocking fullback in the history of the game.
Oh yeah.
Do you think he should be in the Hall of Fame?
I personally do. I mean, I don't know what the credentials or the criteria is for a fullback, but the man has blocked for me, LaDainian Tomlinson, who's in the Hall of Fame, Corey Dillon, who's in the Hall of Fame, Adrian Morrell. I think everybody that ran behind Lorenzo has had a breakout year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And he would do things that most fullbacks wouldn't do. He's the type that, he is the perfect guy. Like, if you're going out, you know, with a double date, he will jump on the grenade for you. Like, he'll take the one that's not attractive and gladly. I mean, just open, like, hey, that's mine.
He's a fullback.
2-7, you go.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Fullback mentality.
Fullback.
He will jump on the grenade. Goes above and beyond the call of duty. So what he would do, he would like go through the line of scrimmage. So there's an isolation. He has the middle linebacker, right? But he's so talented. He'll see a guy come off the tackle. Let's say it's the three technique. He'll chip the three technique, right? Then he'll chip another guy, the outside linebacker, up to the middle linebacker, flatten him, and then go to the safety. I mean, he was just that nimble because he's a low center of gravity. He can move. He's very nimble in between space. And he would do that consistently, get three or four guys along the way. And that's something you just can't coach. He willingly did that for, 13, 14 years. So, yes, in my mind, yes, Lorenzo Neal should be in the NFL Hall of Fame.
I agree. Hall of Fame. Are you going to have a fullback?
Of course.
There we go.
I mean, listen. It. One thing we are going to do here is we are going to run the football. How well? I don't know yet, but we are going to run the football.
I love it.
Matter of fact, you got the eligibility left. You look like a good fullback.
You by the way, you have you don't have eligibility left, but I think you could still I had a tweet the other probably a couple of years ago because you're one of those guys who still has all the muscle. How many yards could you get in an NFL Sunday right now if you're behind the best offensive line, your current age?
Oh, my God. The way my knees feel, I would probably get what's blocked for. I would say if I got 25 carries, I could get 25 yards.
No, stop. I don't believe that.
That's not listen, bad. I mean, yeah,
that's
I
only, what, 2 yards
the
less
way
than
my
your career?
Knees feel right now. There's no way. No way. But you know what? The league is not as physical as it used to be.
It's true. So, you just saying 25 carries, people listening right now are going to be like, what is he talking about, 25 carries? No one carries the ball 25 times. And that was a light day for you.
Yeah, it was. It was. Anything less than 25 carries was a beautiful day.
Yes, yes.
I was used to 30, 35 times a game, sometimes 40.
That's crazy.
With golf season in full swing, Chevy wants to help you make the most of every drive, and the all-electric Blazer EV's bold design and dynamic performance make it the perfect electric vehicle to get you to the course in style and comfort. Chevrolet, together let's drive.
Now here he is, more Eddie George.
All right, so if you had to, if someone was, let's say, Eddie George, and then the first line after would be the thing you're most proud of in your career, I have an answer for it. That should be your answer, but I want to know your answer first.
Oh, my God.
Is it the Heisman?
Is he a wonderful father and husband?
No, you can't do that. Is it the Heisman? Is it the four Pro Bowls? Is it AFC champion? What would be the first thing?
I would say the Heisman.
Okay.
I would say that. I mean, that trophy is probably the most prestigious award that you can win. I believe in all of sports. Because you have 4 years to try to get it done. It takes one special year to do it. And the competition is so thick. And it's a team award, really, because you have to be on the right team at the right time and have the right moments to attain it. And there have been some awesome, awesome players, College Football Hall of Famers, as well as NFL Hall of Famers that trophy has eluded. You know, look at Eric Dickerson. He should have probably won it when he was at SMU. Marshall Faulk, you can see the same thing. I was fortunate enough to win it. So, yeah, I would definitely say the Heisman.
Okay.
I'm curious to hear your
Yeah,
hear
so
your
that's
answer.
Incorrect. The answer should okay. be, and this is going to be schooling some of our younger audience right now, but the answer should be the first cover athlete on Madden all time.
Ah.
Because that yeah. is iconic. And I think people are like, yes. wait, no way was it. Yes, in the 90s, the cover of Madden was always Madden himself, and you were the very first player to
very
be on the cover of Madden. And I remember that game so vividly and seeing the first player on it. So I think that should be the answer. That's something that people should bring up more often that, you know, now we're what, year 20 of having cover, you know, athletes on the cover, but you were number
yeah.
one.
Yeah,
you can
20.
Only be one, there's only one number one and you were it.
Yes. And you know what? I'd never thought of that as an accomplishment, but now that you mention it, you're absolutely correct. That is an iconic game, which I still play to this very day. My sons do it. If you go back to that first game that I was on, I mean, everybody looks the exact same. Yeah, running backs
yes.
look like linemen.
Yes.
Linemen look like corners. and everybody moves the same.
Yep.
So the graphics are like this. Now you have this 3D world. It's so virtual. It's cylindrical. It's amazing to look at the graphics. It looks so real. But you look at that game, it's like, that's a video game.
Yeah. No, I really do believe it. Like, that's something that, you know, Pete, there's been, 100 Heisman winners? There's only one guy who was the first athlete on one of the best video games.
Sports
video
games. There's only 20 of them, too.
Right.
I'm one of one.
Yeah. Exactly.
I think you also were the inspiration for the truck stick, weren't you?
I may have been.
Yeah.
I don't think there was a truck stick on the prior one. No. Yeah. I think my truck rating might have been a 98.
Yeah.
I believe. My speed pissed me off, though. They pissed me off with the speed. I think they had made an 87.
Oh, you got caught all the time by like defensive linemen.
Well, no.
In the game that happened.
You were a part of I think my favorite collision in the history of the NFL, the one with Ray Lewis. I see that highlight all the time. Man. You guys, that was when you guys were both like at the peak of your careers, both going downhill right at each other, hit each other in the faces. Yeah. It was just like a face-to-face smash. You fall out of bounds, you get up, and you just start barking at each other. Do you remember what you were screaming into his face and what he was screaming into your face right afterwards?
I said, Ray, my God, what beautiful eyes you have. And the black paint under your eyes just really highlighted that much more. You're a really lovely man. No, it was the heat of the battle. You know, we've always had battles like that. We've had several collisions before that. Some he won, some I won. And when we in Baltimore and Tennessee played back then, it was a war, you know, and I truly mean that. Like, it was a true battle. It wasn't about the scoreboard. It was about hitting you with bad intentions. And if we could take you out of the game, that was the victory, period. End of story. You know, that's how it was. And if you lost your life that day playing that team or one of us, it was fine. You were comfortable with that. So that was one of our last battles. That was the last battle that I had with Ray in the Titans uniform. And it was very emotional, you know, that day for me, because I felt that was my last year in the Titans. I knew it was going to be my last year in the Titans uniform. And I remember I dislocated my shoulder in the second quarter, and I thought it was done for the day. And I was so pissed off. I was like, I'll be damned. There's no way I'm going to miss this game because of my shoulder. I told him to strap this motherfucker up and let's go.
Yes.
You know, let's go after it. And if I died today, you know, trying to beat the Baltimore Ravens, then so be it. But I was not going to leave that field, lose that game, or the image of me and that Titans uniform was not going to be me walking to the locker room and holding my arm. It was going to be leaving that stadium victorious, and that's what it was.
And I would imagine your durability. I mean, you never missed a start in your career with the Titans, Oilers/Titans. Mm-hmm. And when we joke about like the carries, I don't think people fully sometimes realize how crazy it was in the NFL. 20 years ago, you had a year in 2000 when you had 400 plus carries, which is just stupid to think about now. What was the closest you were though to missing a start? Were you like, were there times where you're like, oh man?
Oh yeah. Oh, God, yeah. There was a few times. That year, I had a separated ribs. I had a sprained knee and a turf toe that I was fighting in 2000. But I had accumulated all those carries. And I was the walking wounded. And it was a game we played against the Washington Redskins on Monday night. And that's when I felt a pop in my foot, and I could not walk the next day. Wind up playing Baltimore the next week, and I'm like, I don't know if I can play. There's no way for me to play. I thought that I can practice all week long. I sat down during practice. I got to the game day, and I said, hey, if I can walk, I can play. So I wound up walking without my boot, felt good, strapped it up, and went out there and limped my way to getting over 100 yards. And that's how I went for the most of the year. So I came very close to missing some games and shutting it down. just to get healed of it. Maybe I could have played a little bit longer and I did that. So, but I have no regrets.
Yeah, 403 is crazy.
I would say that your career kind of disproves the existence of the Madden curse. Because if anybody was going to get cursed after that, it would be you being the first one. And you, how many years did you play after that?
I played three more years.
Yeah.
And that was technically the Madden year. That was the Madden year. Like, right. So 2001 was the cover, but it was the 2000 season, and you have an incredible season that year. So, yeah, the Madden curse is kind of bullshit if you just look at the first year.
That's what I said. I don't look at it that way. But other guys, you know, they've gone through. I'm now the following year I had my worst season. I didn't rush for 1,000 yards. That was the only time I've never rushed for 1,000 yards in my entire career. With the exception of Dallas, which was like a pit stop and a cup of coffee. So I really don't count that one. But yeah, that was the only time I ever missed a game or missed 1,000 yards.
The Cowboys, I like forget that you're on the Cowboys. That's when they do the weird uniforms, like Emmitt Smith on the Cardinals or Randy Moss on the Titans.
Yeah.
Eddie George on the Cowboys is definitely, it feels weird.
It was very weird from the beginning. And I remember looking in the mirror for a preseason game wearing the Dallas Star and the white jersey, the blue numbers, the silver pants. And I grew up in Philadelphia, right? So I grew up hating Dallas. And I've always hated Dallas. But yet and still, I'm like, God, what are you doing to me? I'm a Dallas Cowboy. Like, this is – I can't embrace this. This is disgusting. And I didn't feel – you know how you say – when players say, you look good, you feel good, you play good. Uh-huh. Well – I felt none of that, and I did not play well at all.
Yeah, so that's interesting to me because I wonder if there are other players out there that grow up as diehard fans of super teams or like a specific team, and then they join when they get to the NFL, they get drafted by their rival growing up. If there's like a small bit of them that looks into the mirror and is like, this doesn't feel right, you know? Because it's human nature a little bit.
It is. I mean, especially when you've been with the organization for, you know, 5, 6, 7 plus years, 8 plus years. It's weird. But, you know, look at Tom Brady. He was with New England for 16 years and goes to Tampa Bay and feels comfortable in that environment, comfortable in the uniform and locker room and COVID time and line and went to Super Bowl. So I guess it works with different people.
Yeah, for sure. Can you just pretend that me and Big Cat are recruits? I want to hear your pitch as a head coach. You got to work on, like, living room presence is something that we hear about all the time. So, like,
really?
You come into our living room. I know we're probably outside your demographic as 35, 36, 37-year-old white guys. But,
no, absolutely not.
If you want to just, like, give us the pitch, why should we go to Tennessee State?
Well, first of all, Tennessee State is a wonderful university. It has great tradition. You're in a city of Nashville, Tennessee, which is probably the greatest city, one of the greatest cities in all the world, one of the greatest destinations. No state tax, ton fan base. We are building something special here from the ground up, something that you can definitely be a part of. You can go to Alabama, you can go to Ohio State, you can go to all the other schools and walk into that tradition. But if you're going to be one of the pioneers of starting something fresh, something new from the ground up, come be a part of that.
Can I give you a couple notes? Is that all right?
Absolutely.
Okay, first of all, you have to recruit the mom first. You didn't say hi to mama. So,
well, I don't see mom. I'm looking at 235-year-old. It was
a little rude to imply that we didn't have mothers.
Yeah.
I'm talking to the guys in the room. Also still have a mom. I don't see a sister. I don't see a grandma.
You still have your shoes on. What the hell? Take your shoes off when you come to the house. Jesus Christ.
Oh, really? That's how we strip down. Okay, I apologize. Let me take off my shoes.
My mom brought out the sweet tea and you didn't even compliment her on a recipe. It was Lipton, but you didn't even say it tasted good. And then the other thing, you brought up state income taxes. Wink. Gotcha. Say no more.
That's it, right? Especially when we're walking into this image, name, and likeness era where you can get paid for that. And what better place? Can you tell me any other college city in America where you can take advantage of your name, image, and likeness from a marketing side to get a chance to keep, you know, most of your money?
Austin.
Exactly. Thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Austin, Texas?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a damn good one. Yeah. Okay. But he named too.
Yeah.
Good one. That's a good one.
Yeah. Okay. I had one last question. So you obviously played with Steve McNair, who's a legend of the game. What was it like? Like, what was he like? I feel like that's another guy that, to the younger audience, they don't remember watching him, and they might not remember how awesome it was and how different it was to watch a guy like Steve McNair play in you know, his peak. What was it like, you know, being in the huddle with him and watching him play every single Sunday?
Man, Steve, God, he was a country boy at heart. Never liked to live, never liked to work out, but was always in shape. Like, just one of those guys that was just naturally strong and strong-willed. Did anything, would do anything for anybody, give you the shirt off his back, would sacrifice his body and for the good of the team. And God, I mean, he, just his energy and his spirit in the huddle, you knew you had a chance to win every single game, no matter the situation. Just to have the confidence, like, yo, this guy is going to find a way to win the game. He could be throwing, he could maybe throw him for like 80 yards during the whole course of the game through four quarters, playing, having a piss poor game. But if it comes down to that last minute drive or that one play, he was going to find a way to win. And you could see it in his eyes. It just permeated throughout the team. So having played with Steve for most of my career, all of my career, was a tremendous honor. You know, he had a knack of eluding defenders and finding ways to extend plays, was a quiet leader. But I tell you what, the man was just a joy to be around off the field as well. You know, he had some wonderful times together at the games, talking and sharing a beer or two and telling stories. He always wanted me to come down to his farm in Mississippi with him and his brothers to have some moonshine.
Ooh, I bet that was, and, yeah.
Man, listen, you know, it was good. And I hate the fact that we can't share these times now together, these stories together. This is what it's all about. After you finish playing the game and sharing the stories of what it was like playing, being our teammates and playing in these games and the wars that we had and what we're doing now in our lives. You feel kind of cheated of that. But Steve was just an awesome, awesome player. And I would advise any young kid to Google Steve Air McNair, Alcorn State. You are going to see spectacular quarterback play. He's like a man among men. It was crazy watching him play.
Yeah,
yeah. One of the best highlight tapes to watch is his college reel, because you're right, he was so much bigger, but not only was he bigger and stronger, he was more agile, he was more nimble than these guys, and he had a howitzer on his arm.
Mm-hmm.
That year,
he did.
Was he the year that he got MVP? He was the co-MVP,
co-MVP,
right?
With Peyton.
Was he,
yes, Peyton Manning?
You got to see him behind the scenes when he won that a little bit, I would imagine. Was he was he excited about being co-MVP, or was he like, God damn it, I wish I was the MVP?
He cried. I mean, he was excited. We saw what he went through to get to that point. I'm talking about the years prior to that. You know, there was a playoff game where in our first playoff game against Buffalo Bills, you can look this up, I think he threw for under 100 yards the entire game. Didn't have the confidence to throw out a 5-yard out and to mature into the quarterback that he was in terms of calling plays, the line of scrimmage, checking into different plays, manipulating defenses and safeties and corners and all of that with his, you know, looking them off. I mean, he became a master of his craft. And when he won the MVP award, we stood up, applauded him for about 10 minutes, it seemed like. And he was truly overwhelmed by it. Truly overwhelmed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he was very, very thankful and happy that, hey, you know what? He didn't mind sharing it with Peyton.
Yeah.
But I'm glad he got his just due.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot one last question. Is the Heisman that you won, is it still broken from the X-ray machine?
No.
They fixed it.
That was fixed. I should have kept that because the middle finger on it was broken.
Yeah.
So, it's a great story.
Yeah. What was LaGuardia made you put it through the X-ray machine?
They made me put it through the X-ray machine.
That's crazy.
And I'm like, dude, what the hell? I'm going to hijack a plane with a trophy? And I'm looking at the security guy. He's looking at me, and I'm like, there's a stare down. I'm like, I'm not going to put it in there. So finally, the SID told me, said, Eddie, just go ahead. We'll deal with it on the other side. So I walked through the security belt, or excuse me, the x-ray deal, and I'm waiting on the other side for the trophy to come out. And it's the conveyor belt stops. And I'm like, okay. And then he starts it again. It stops. It's not going anywhere. It's not moving. And then there's like this kind of a panic thing. And then he looks in the x-ray machine. He says, all right, push it. It's stuck. So then he reaches inside, grabs it by the leg. And he says, all right, go ahead and move it forward. So he pushes it forward. Doesn't move. He says, okay, put it in reverse. Put it in reverse. Tries to unjam it. Doesn't do it. And he's doing this for about 5 minutes, trying to pull him back and forth. And he says, okay, let me get some Vaseline and put it on top of and around the x-ray deal and so we can pull out. So after 10 minutes of this, I am clenching my butt cheeks like, oh, my God, he is destroying my trophy. What is it going to look like when he pulls it out? So he finally pulls it out, and the middle finger is, like, bent backwards or forward like this. Because it's like this, yeah. And it's like the hand, and I'm like, okay, so who's going to pay for this? Are you? So instead of getting an argument, the Heisman Trust, they sent me a new one, and ironically, it became a Jeopardy question. Who was the only Heisman Trophy winner to ever break his trophy?
Yeah. Well, and you didn't even break it. You should have kept that, though.
Yeah, that's TSA broke it.
Yeah.
I should have, right? I should have, but the Heisman, they have it. They still have the same trophy. I should try to get it.
That's wisdom later on, though, because like as a 21-year-old, and you just have the biggest,
the perfect thing, right?
Yeah, you have the biggest moment of your life, and then all of a sudden, the next morning, the trophy breaks. I just so you know, we've had a few Heisman Trophy winners on here. They take a lot better care of it now. When Joe Burrow came into the studio after he won, they had like security team and a huge case. So I think that maybe that's another Eddie George, you know, rule afterwards, that they're like, you know what, we're not going to let this trophy break going through security at LaGuardia.
It would have been very funny, though, right, if it, like a SportsCenter commercial, if Danny Werfel was behind you in line at LaGuardia as you're getting the trophy and he gets stuck, the entire line gets held up because your Heisman's in there. He's like, come on, Eddie, move it.
Right, you missed a flight. That would be great.
Yes. Well, Coach, this has been awesome. We really appreciate your time. Best of luck, and thanks for doing this.
Hey, man, I enjoyed it, guys. Thanks a lot. Have me on anytime you want me on.
I love it. Sounds good. We'll take you up on that. Oh, and fuck Ohio State. Awesome. Just fuck Ohio State. I had to say
Go
that.
Go Big Blue.
Eddie George is brought to you by Simply Safe. Simply Safe is an award-winning home security system, so you know it's engineered with the latest technology you want to keep your family safe. But what really sets Simply Safe apart is its people. Highly trained security experts, they're always there for you when you need them. These are people who truly care about keeping you safe. When an alarm goes off, a person who cares is there for you with a phone call to make sure that you're okay. When an emergency happens, a person who cares is there for you. They get help, whether it be fire or police responders, to your front door right away, even if you're just having a problem setting up your system. A person who cares is there for you with a friendly chat and a quick resolution. The bottom line is, when you need them most, Simply Safe is there 24/7 with people who care and experts trained to not only keep you safe, but also make you feel safe. It's one of the many reasons why U.S. News called Simply Safe the best home security of 2021. To learn more about Simply Safe and how they can help protect you and your family, go to simplysafe.com/PMT today to customize your system. You get a free security camera. You also get a 60-day risk-free trial, so there's absolutely nothing to lose. Go to simplysafe.com/PMT.
Okay, let's wrap up. We have a Monday reading for the people. This one is, it's interesting. It's New York Times, so we're in the New York Times, and it is titled, What is Chuggy? You know it when you see it.
Can you spell that for me?
Cheugy. And then underneath it says, out of touch, basic, a new term to describe a certain aesthetic is gaining popularity on TikTok. Thank you, New York Times, for reporting on this. Okay, here we go. Okay, TikTok, I have a new word for you that my friends and I use that you clearly are all in need of. Haley Kane, 24, a copywriter in Los Angeles, says in a TikTok post posted on March 30th. In the video, she gestures to another video of a girl who is describing the type of people who get married at 20 years old or have millennial girl boss energy and who wonders, what do we call this kind of person? I never wondered what to call.
She just used a lot of different words that she already used.
Yeah, how about girl boss?
Girl boss, major like girl boss energy.
Yeah, girl boss.
I actually think
if Hank, I see girl boss energy, I'm like, that's a girl boss.
Hank has girl boss energy sometimes. But I mean that as a compliment. Like, it's actually pretty sweet to see you operate. You're like, mm-hmm. your goals.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. Girl boss. All right. So she says, what? Are you okay?
No, I'm fine.
And no, you don't look fine. I meant it as a genuine compliment. Like, girl boss is the best thing you can call somebody.
I don't know how I could take it any other way.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So she goes on. I keep seeing videos like this, Miss Kane says in her TikTok. The word, my friend, is chuggy.
Huh?
Okay. It's not quite basic, which can describe someone who is a conformist or perhaps generic in their tastes. And it's not quite uncool. It's not embarrassing or even always negative. Chuggy, pronounced chuggy, can be used broadly to describe someone who is out of date or trying too hard. This is the New York Times writing this, by the way.
So the
is that Cap PFT?
It's yeah. Cap. It's Cap. On my binary system of cap, no cap. This is
cap, so, big time cap.
What was the definition again?
The it's not. Oh, so chuggy can be used broadly to describe someone who is out of date or trying too hard. Again, I just have to say it. New York Times is writing this, out of date, trying too hard. New York Times.
I would never like. Even first of all, it's not that it offends me, like the description.
Well, it says it says it's not supposed to be mean.
No, it's not
even
mean.
Though it's very mean.
It's not mean at
it's
all.
It's the meanest non-mean word.
I think the most chuggy thing you can do is to write an article about whether something is chuggy or
right,
not.
Exactly. I agree.
Uh-huh.
All right, it says, and while a lot of chuggy things are associated with millennial women, Hank again.
Mm-hmm.
The term can
be
applied.
No, Hank's not a millennial woman. I'm just saying, like, girl boss. Dude, being a girl boss, it has nothing to do with gender.
It's girl boss energy.
Any gender can give off
correct.
Girl boss energy.
What are some characteristics? Like, I'm a little bit confused here.
Just goals. You're,
yeah.
Just goals.
Vacationing. Hard. Yeah. When you vacation hard. That's girl boss energy.
You're also like, you're a bad bitch that takes no prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay.
You get a little bit angry at us when you're on your period. All right, and while a lot of chuggy things are associated with millennial women, this is the meanest non-mean thing ever.
Yeah.
The term can be applied to anyone of any gender and any age. It's not just a way to describe people, according to people who have embraced the word.
Would you say even maybe like mid-30s white guys?
Well, we're going to get there. The following are also chuggy. These are a list of things that are chuggy.
Okay.
The Hype House. What is the Hype House?
That's Josh Richards and the Sway Boys.
Netflix.
Oh, no.
No,
whoa,
that's Netflix,
whoa, whoa.
Right?
They're the opposite. They're
Brianna
the
Chicken Fry told me it's Netflix. They got a Netflix show. Hype House.
Yes.
Okay.
Sway Boys are their enemy.
Thanks, Chicken Fry. Golden Goose Sneakers.
Yep.
Anything associated with Barstool Sports.
Whoa.
Damn.
Cap.
Just fucking right at us.
Sheesh.
Sheesh. Gucci belts with the large double G logo. That's cool.
Well, why would you buy a Gucci belt and not get the Gucci belt that has the large double G?
It'd be like going to get a fucking Ferrari and be like, you know what? Take that fucking horse off.
I don't need the hood ornament.
Yeah.
Yeah, get out of here. Like, you know what? I'll buy the Magnum condoms, but you can put them in the regular size box.
Yeah. I wear a Mercedes-Benz fucking jumpsuit, and I don't own a Benz. So the Gucci belts with the large double G logo, being really into sneaker culture, that's another shot, Ray Dunn pottery, sorry, and anything Chevron. Now, I don't understand the gas part.
The gas, yeah,
the gas. If you get your gas from Chevron, you're chuggy, bro.
It is kind of a try-hard move when there's
only
a
go to
Shell
BP
station
oil.
Just
yeah.
down the street.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Ray Dunn pottery, by the way, I looked it up. It's actually fucking fire. It's basically just pottery with just words on it. So it's like cookies.
Mm-hmm.
And like, here's where you put your coffee beans. And it's fucking cool because everything's
just
laid
labeled
out
for you.
Yeah.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah.
Like Off-White.
Yeah, kind of. Mm-hmm.
Also,
sneaker
big,
culture.
Big Cat, you have like the most shoes of like anyone I know.
Right. And
you're
I chuggy. Work for Barstool. So yeah I'm chuggy. And everyone knows I walk around with Gucci belts.
You're chuggy king.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, it's funny to
and
me.
And I always get Chevron.
So, yeah, obviously.
I wonder if
I
it's
wouldn't
like,
be caught dead at a Texaco.
Does Chevron have like a shirt line I don't know about?
This probably has nothing to do with the
like NASA?
Gas oil magnet.
Yeah.
NASA's just cool. NASA's just hype.
Chevron, no cap.
Wait, but this Chevron isn't capitalized. Are we sure they're talking about the gas station?
Find it for us then. Is there another Chevron?
Not a proper noun.
I have a feeling that this last minute of Part of My Take, when someone who knows what Chevron is listening to it, we will never sound more out of touch than we do right
now. But here's the thing. That doesn't make us choogy.
Right, because
we're not trying.
If we were hard, then we would know already what that is.
Well, no, if we were choogy, we would be like, of course we know what Chevron is.
Just pretend
that'd be a try hard, right.
Wait, I think I'm right.
Really? What is it?
A line or stripe in the shape of a V or inverted V, especially one on the sleeve of a uniform, indicating rank or length of service.
Right, that's just a chevron pattern. So the chevron logo has that V on it.
Oh, it does. Yeah.
Yeah, so chevron.
So no, but I think you might be right. I don't think it's the gas.
New York Times, AP style, they would have capitalized that C.
Damn. Yeah.
If they were talking about the gas station.
Oh, he's right. When AP style.
Oh, big facts.
MLA bitches.
Yeah. Damn. You spell out the 1 through 9. You don't write the number.
That's so true. Good point. All right, so chevron, not the gas. But
oh, I think
wait,
it's
so
like,
I can still get
a lot
my
of,
chevron.
You see chevrons on a lot of shirts and like soccer jerseys.
Right.
They might just be like the pattern on a shirt. Is choogy.
Damn.
Which I kind of agree with. That is choogy.
Okay. one of my friends, this is a quote from Ms. Kane, by the way, on her TikTok. One of my friends said lasagna is choogy. Who doesn't think lasagna is choogy?
Basic.
Yeah. What is it? The second layer of pasta and cheese where you're like, this is now becoming choogy. That is actually tried. If you're actually breaking it down, just how it works, like if you just eat spaghetti,
mm-hmm.
that's normal. But the minute you start adding extra cheese and extra layers of pasta,
it's like
that is trying too hard.
Twice baked potato.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. When it comes to lasagna, I think lasagna can be choogy if you go to like a trendy restaurant and they're like, this is our vegan lasagna where all the different layers are like shaved eggplant that's been baked.
Yes.
Or when they try to add ingredients that have no business around a lasagna. I think grandma's lasagna, like imagine telling an old Italian grandmother that you're not going to eat her lasagna because it's choogy.
Yeah.
She'll just smack you in the throat with a spoon.
You're such a normie, grandma.
Yeah.
All right. Things that are decidedly unchoogy, according to these people, are thrifting, making your own clothes, handmade products. This sucks.
Yeah.
You basically have to just work your ass off. You have to work in a sweatshop to be unchoogy.
Or you have to be like a Native American 400 years ago.
Yeah. Levi's jeans, Birkenstocks, home decor not found at Target, looking good for yourself and not caring what other people think. That confidence exudes non-chooginess. I'm just going to throw this out there. Whenever someone actively says, I don't care what everyone thinks, you care what people think.
Absolutely.
100%
of
the time.
Why would you say it?
You're like, yeah, look at these. These jeans don't really fit. I look kind of frumpy in them. I don't care what people think. Yeah, you do.
I think that it is the peak of chooginess to go to somebody's house, look at their decorations, and then like turn. You see a live, laugh, love poster on the wall, and you're like, where did you get that?
Yeah.
And they're like, if they say anywhere but Target, then you're like, okay, it's cool as fuck.
Yeah, right.
But
if that's
say
a Target,
no.
I'm out.
If you have one of those like old French martini posters on your wall,
yep.
You better fucking get that at Walmart.
Yeah, fuck.
It's also funny because in like 6 months or whatever, it's like those things that they're saying will, like, once other people think they're
correct,
cool, are like outdated.
And then Target home decor will actually become cool.
Yes,
yep.
Yes,
because
exactly.
It's like, you know, ironic.
Yep.
That's essentially all internet culture is hating things and then eventually loving it because you've convinced everyone else to hate it.
Well, it's exactly. Your group of friends all being on the same level and agreeing to hate certain things at certain times, and then you move on like a pack together, and then when a pack reaches your former level of irony,
right.
You hate those people.
This is what happened to Nickelback.
That was you
right.
5 years
ago.
Correct. Imagine Dragons.
Yes.
Yeah, The Office, I think, is like the only thing that like, outweighs it. Where it's like...
Chuggy-proof.
If you still watch it, like it's still funny,
right.
Objectively, but there's like corny-ass memes and shit about it, but like, it's still very good.
Chuggy-proof.
I have seen some Chuggy backlash to The Office for the gifs and the memes.
Oh.
I have seen that. Like, it's a basic bitch thing.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But like, if you watch it, it's like objectively funny.
I noticed they didn't say under the list of chuggy things, coffee memes. So I think I'm good.
No, you're good. I think that one is like two levels behind on
like,
the irony.
I did like
you.
The person,
you laughed the irony on it.
The person who called me out was like, "This is Facebook mom status." Memes. I was like, oh, really? You just got that?
Uh-huh.
But okay.
So the person who's writing this, I think we've all kind of been in her shoes before, where if you are online, you just want to feel like you're smarter and better in a different way than somebody that you already don't like.
You want
so she found people that she already doesn't like on TikTok, and she's like, I'm going to create an entire thing in my head so I can point at them and be like, this is why they're bad.
You're just desperately trying to get on the inside of the joke.
Yes.
At all times.
But you can't. It's one of those things where, like, you can't be a writer for New York Times and be, like, cool on TikTok.
Correct. Or never think gonna that, happen. Like, you can report on the trends. All right, so let's pick it up. So all those things were said by Gabby Rassen, 23, a software developer in Los Angeles, who coined the term. She said she started using the word back in 2013 while attending Beverly Hills High School. This is what I've been telling you about California teenagers. They fucking create words, and then they just label you with them. And they're like, that means you're not cool. But she wanted a way to describe people who were slightly off-trend, but she couldn't quite come up with the right term. So she created her own. It was a category that didn't exist, she said. Yeah, you made up a fucking word. There was a missing word that was on the edge of my tongue and nothing to describe it, and Chuggy came to me. How it sounded fit the meaning. Also here, there's an Instagram account called Chug Life, and it has Instagram Chuggy Instagram captions listed. Uh-huh. 20 fun on 21st birthdays. I'm feeling 22 on 22nd birthdays. Thank you, next. Life's a beach. I did a thing after dying or cutting your hair.
I thought you meant dying. Like,
no, that would be funny if you died. Yeah, and you're died. Like, I did a thing. I died.
Dying is actually dying is the most chuggy thing.
Because guys, quick update: I died.
I'm dead. You make all your friends like come to a party for you when you're not even there.
Yeah. All right. So the word spread among her classmates and camp friends, and when her friends went off to college, it took off on their campuses. Everyone in our sorority knows the word chuggy. Isn't being in a sorority kind of chuggy?
Yes.
It absolutely is, right?
I think everything can be chuggy.
Yeah.
Right. Everything can be chuggy if somebody dislikes you enough to want to force you into a chuggy,
chuggy
category.
Yeah, right. Said Abby Siegel, a producer and former student at the University of Colorado Buffalo, or Boulder, who said she learned the phrase at a summer camp that Ms. Rassen also attended. Wow. But chuggy was in no way mainstream until Ms. Kane posted her TikTok. You know what the coolest thing to do on the internet is fucking find the root person for every single phrase. Mm-hmm. This sounds awesome. All right, it quickly amassed hundreds of thousands of views, inspiring explainers. Though chuggy has slight negative connotations, I'd say more than that, people who use the term said they often identify as chuggy themselves. Yeah. Oh, this is like, hey, I can make fun of it because I'm also half chuggy.
Well, it's either,
my mom was a chug.
Yeah, it's either that or like we're taking back the word. It's our word.
Yeah. That is such a cop-out.
You can't call me chuggy anymore because you're not chuggy.
A bunch of California teenagers made a word to basically call everyone in the rest of the country lame.
Losers.
But they're like, but this one time I bought a throw pillow from Target, so I can do this.
My dad died, okay? Yeah. So I have the ultimate ghosting move. I've got chuggy in my blood.
Yeah, my dad died, and his last words were, I did a thing.
Yeah.
Everyone can be chuggy, said Ms. Siegel. Everyone has something chuggy in their closet. We didn't intend for it to be a mean thing. Some people have claimed that it is. It's just a fun word we used as a group of friends that somehow resonated with a bunch of people.
I think my
bullshit.
My biggest complaint in all this is if you're going to invent a word and take credit for it, have it be a better word. The word itself is chuggy.
Yeah.
Like, chuggy, the word is fucking chuggy.
Also, just be mean about it. You want to be mean about it. We know you want to be mean about it. Don't fucking say, like, oh, we can all be chuggy.
They're sugarcoating it a little bit. Yeah.
The women also don't claim to be the arbiters of the term. It's also totally open to your interpretation, said Ms. Kane.
That's such a girl boss move.
I'll send something to our group chat and be like, is this chuggy? And some will say yes, and some will say no. Michael Kotis, 24, an actor in Los Angeles, how's that going for you, dude? Discovered the word on TikTok, and it immediately resonated as a niche descriptor. I was like, oh my God, this is the perfect word, he said. It is a certain subgroup of people that just don't quite get it. I'm actually going to disagree, Michael. I think we totally get it. We like the things we like, and if they're lame, we don't fucking care.
Mountain Chug.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Listen,
that guy was mean. That guy had some girl boss energy.
This guy's very much still in search of his own identity.
He's a 24-year-old aspiring actor in Los Angeles.
Yeah, but
the only thing that makes him be able to fall asleep at night is to be able to laugh in his head and be like, "Did you see that mom on Facebook from Columbus, Ohio? What a chew!"
Yeah, did you see like the family I went by in the park and their kids weren't wearing Levi's?
Yeah,
and they had a Gucci stroller. Like, I can't imagine being like sinking myself to that level. At the end of the day, it's just about people wanting to feel like they're superior to somebody because right. they have a label for
they're
it.
They're chew. All right, Alex Luger. 30...
Do you have to like? Are they trying to like make people brand themselves or like carry papers?
I don't know.
Always identify themselves know. As chugs.
All right, this one. This guy doesn't really fit in, but I love it. Alex Luger, 32, a boat maker in Springfield, Missouri. That doesn't fit. The teenager from Beverly Hills High School and the actor, 24-year actor in Los Angeles, said that she self-identifies as a bit chuggy. She also, I mean, I would think living in Missouri makes you chuggy.
You can't be a bit. It's like being pregnant. You're either pregnant or you're not.
Right. That's the thing they're doing to you, Alex. You don't understand. Just the fact that you live in Missouri means that the coast, you know, the L.A. people think you're a chug.
Yeah, and they're making you, what they're doing is they're making you hate your own culture.
Correct. Correct. She also learned about the word through TikTok. We were basic in our 20s, and now we're chuggy in our 30s. Ooh, I like that. That's actually...
I like that, yeah, yeah.
If you can't handle me at my most basic, you can't... Or no, what is
it? If you can't handle... If you don't love me at my basic, you don't deserve to hate me at my chug.
Chug.
So what happens in your 40s?
I think you die.
You just die, yeah.
You die. Chuggy is just the latest in a long line of niche identifiers that have gained traction on the internet where people relentlessly categorize highly specific archetypes in starter pack memes and videos. It's no coincidence that Chuggy gained traction on TikTok, a platform that has functioned as an escape from Instagram's once dominant aesthetic, which is the pinnacle of chuggy. Mm-hmm. Oh, fuck.
Live fast, die basic, and leave a chuggy-looking corpse.
Damn, Instagram. Instagram is the chuggist. Kelly Wright, an experimental sociolinguist and PhD candidate at the University of Michigan, already can tell she's a chug, who studies language, said that with the rise of social media, we see this is where New York Times, like, they just were writing, they're like, hey, let's write about this stupid word that TikTok made up. And now she's got a fucking interview, a PhD person?
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
I think what we're all dancing around here a little bit is like they're just trying to think of different ways to describe Salt Bae.
Mm-hmm.
And they finally came up with a label for him. Yeah. Congratulations.
All right, I'm skipping her. Let's see. Oh, she says a lot of shit. And for any millennials worried about being behind the trends... That's us. Ms. Kane said, not to worry. I think millennials have noticed that some things we use to consider chuggy are coming back in style and aren't chuggy anymore. She said, when I was first introduced to the word in 2015, low-rise jeans were chuggy. Now, 6 years later, low-rise jeans are back in style, and I don't think they're chuggy anymore. That's a great way to end this piece. That, like, you know, everyone gets a second shot. When they're labeled with chuggy.
Yeah, nature is healing. Like, the cyclical nature of the chug. We need one person that's in charge of determining where the chuggy line is drawn at any given point.
Fuck.
Like, who's the most millennial-ass Southern California... Ryan Russillo.
Ryan Russillo.
The chuggy god.
He's definitely millennial.
But yeah. Like, whatever Ryan happens to be into at that time, that is now chuggy.
Yeah, that's true. So just weightlifting is chuggy.
Weightlifting is chuggy now.
Physical,
keeping your body in good physical health, kind of a try-hard move.
Would you say this, we have a lot of chug on this podcast?
Yeah,
I'd say it's
we're chug forward.
Yeah, we have a way too much chug. We're overflowing with chug.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want to be anything but chug, honestly. Like, it basically says that you kind of know what's cool, but you're late on everything.
You know what?
And I'm cool with that.
We literally, anything associated with Barstool Sports.
True.
Literally
true.
The definition.
Well, so. PMT isn't really part of Barstool.
True.
The difference is, because what you just said and described, I think you might be so chuggy that you're not chuggy.
Really?
Yeah.
Self-awareness of the chug?
You've achieved the singularity. Where you know how like computers one day will achieve like oneness with the human brain?
Yeah,
that's what you've just done with the chug. You might have just killed chug.
Yeah, you're right. I've one R.I.P. man has killed chug. I do think that Target has very affordable home decor. So.
Oh, if you're decorating a dorm suite or one of your first apartments out of college, you can't go wrong with their posters.
It's also, when you really break it down, what they're doing is they're basically just being like,
poor people are
gross.
Yeah, it's
like, you got your fucking couch from Target.
It's a million ways to be like, oh, that that like cast iron oak tree that you hang on your wall that says nothing is important to me as family and my home.
Yeah.
The fact that you paid under $500 for that means that you're worse than I am.
Live, laugh, love. Could you imagine being poor?
Fuck that.
All right. That's our show. We got an awesome interview coming on Wednesday. Get excited for that. And then we got some stuff coming on Friday.
Chug-ass show.
Well, yeah, that's right. We have a very chuggy guest on Wednesday.
Yeah, very chuggy guest.
You guys will love it.
All right, numbers?
40.
18.
8.
99.
56.
Do we have a 69 ball in there?
No, but we'll make one.
That's fine. 69 is actually a chuggy number.
42.
Ooh, so close. Jackie Robinson Day.
I'm knocking on the door.
Take Studios.
First timer.
You want to do Animal Facts, Jake?
You got it.
Ooh, I saw
Jackie Robinson.
I saw a Doge dog today.
What? We got.
And haven't you been seeing the Doge dog?
I've seen it a couple times. Doge is up big over the weekend.
I think that's a sign.
The manta shrimp.
Whoa, hold on, time out.
We're halfway to the moon.
Okay,
we're on
I'm
our way
now
to the
nervous.
Moon. Why?
You seeing a Doge dog and Doge going up is pretty much the greatest sign that we're living in the Matrix.
Yeah,
that would happen to Neo.
That's true.
That's a glitch. Fuck. They're not. You're not supposed to see the Doge dog.
That's a good point.
God
or if
it.
I do see it, I should not talk about it.
The mantis shrimp has the world's fastest punch.
Wait, say it again?
The mantis shrimp has the world's fastest punch.
That's a fucking sick.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, that's a sick fact.
Love you guys.
Probably take out Jose quick.
Love you guys.
I'll be coming for you anyway. I'll be coming for you anyway. Hey.